3,000 people succumbing to the blast. Red Cross says at least 54 people were killed and more than 1,200 others injured. Two trains loaded with deadly fuel collided at a station at the Chinese border in North Korea. The explosion was deafening. The secretive communist government immediately put a halt to media reports about the incident. Also unclear is whether the blast was associated with a possible threat on the life of North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. He had passed through the site of the blast only 9 hours before returning home from a visit to China. U.S. Marines have put the Iraqi insurgents on notice in strife-torn Fallujah. They warned them to give up their arms or face an attack by American forces. To date, the opposition has given up mainly dud rockets, rusty mortar shells, and grenades labeled inert. It's heavy weaponry the U.S. Marines are looking for at this time. Lieutenant General James Conway says the battle could be costly if Marines launch a new assault to uproot the insurgents. The U.S. appeal comes on the heels of one made by city leaders in Fallujah that has apparently fallen on deaf ears. It could be another day of partisan sparring over the environment. President Bush is visiting the Florida Everglades today, where he and his brother Jeb, Florida's governor, will highlight efforts to protect America's wetland areas. Bush says he's looking forward to their hands-on project.
We're going down to clear out some non-native plants from the Everglade area so that the wetlands can be more healthy and flourish more.
On Earth Day yesterday, Bush announced a new goal of expanding the number of protected wetland areas by 3 million over 5 years. But Democrat John Kerry says wetlands are an excellent example of Bush saying one thing and doing another.
For the last 3.5 years, this administration, this president had a proposal that would have lost us 20 million acres of wetlands. It wasn't until the objections rose.
Oh, poor kids.
And this is your father.
Where's his head?
Camera missed it, I guess. Here's Aunt Judy.
Her hair used to be orange.
Yeah, I guess the camera was a little off. Here's cousin Tommy.
He's fuzzy.
This Mother's Day, take the guesswork out of Mom's photography and printing.
Hey, Mom, open this.
With HP's PhotoSmart 735 digital camera and 2410 all-in-one printer, the one that scans, prints, copies, and faxes.
Wow.
Digital camera and printer. Is it complicated?
No, Mom, it's HP. It's pretty foolproof.
It's what proof?
And now, when you buy both, you'll get a $75 mail-in rebate. Learn more about HP cameras, printers, and PCs at your nearest retailer or hpshopping.com/mom.
Look, Grandma just took a picture of Dad standing in the corner.
Nice.
HP. Invent.
Members of the House yesterday gave the green light to a measure that sets the stage for special elections if a terrorist attack kills 100 or more members of Congress. The decision puts aside for now the larger issue of whether the Constitution should be amended to allow for temporary appointments in the event of an attack. House Judiciary Chair Republican James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin says House is rooted in democratic principles and those principles must be preserved at all costs. International Monetary Fund has issued a warning about the rising price of energy on the global economy. Organization says the current optimism over stronger economic growth could fizzle if there are new terrorist attacks or a huge spike in the price of oil. Finance ministers and central bankers from around the world will be converging this weekend on Washington to discuss the prospects for a global economy. And the 30-year fixed conventional mortgage rate continues to rise, climbing upward for the fifth consecutive week. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
To be or not to be. That is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a 5-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
Planet Jack. Musicians band together.
Now, these particular artists, Alanis, Mike D from Beastie Boys, and Rick Rubin, have cared about these issues for a long time, and they just figured this is something that they should let the world know about.
That's Executive Director of Common Assets, Adam Werbach, talking about the Fire Griles campaign.
This guy is the Deputy Secretary of the Interior, and he's the number two person who looks at basically all of our national parks, and his job is to protect those things.
Stephen Griles is still getting paid over $200,000 a year from his former employers, the coal mining and oil industry.
His activities have been to weaken environmental protections, the protections of our air, of our water, of our streams.
Thanks to Alanis and Mike D, now you can take action.
The truth is that's the power of artists. They can take important ideas and get them out there.
You gotta fight for your rights.
Get involved and go to www.firegriles.com, G-R-I-L-E-S.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, we've got the Presidential Day Planner on tap. Plus, we'll talk to the top man at Salon.com. Right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's Friday, man. Everyone's got the Friday face
on. That's the best morning.
Right. What are you guys doing this weekend? You got plans?
I'm going to D.C. I'm going to eat burgers. I'm going to go sailing. I'm going to sleep, read, and maybe I'll go to the march on Sunday for abortion rights.
Wow. You sound like someone who knows how to enjoy leisure time. Doesn't that sound
I said might march. No, I believe in the march, but I'm just so tired.
No, but just
I feel
the whole,
I should be motivated.
The whole idea of, like, you know, just like you're going to go sailing. To me, like, just the idea of, like, going sailing, oh, that means I got to, you know, get a boat. Yeah, I got to call a guy at a dock. I got, you know, I got to drive. How am I going to get to the dock?
Yeah, I don't have to do anything. I have these fantastic friends who just told me, get on a train, we'll pick you up, we'll drive you to the countryside, we'll borrow our clothes, sleep in our house, we'll cook for you. You do nothing.
Wow.
You sleep, you read, we take you sailing, we feed you burgers. Like, I'm there. All I have to do is get to Penn Station and get on a train.
Now, wait, why would they treat you that way? Have you been calling for the last 2 weeks going, I can't stand it. I want out. Help me. I'm in New York. I have to get up every day and talk to this guy on the radio.
How did you know?
They're like, any friend who offers that much.
Yeah, they know the pain I'm in.
Yeah, the cry for help every day. Yeah, I've got to get me out of here. They're like, okay, come down. We'll help you.
Exactly. They're sending in a medevac team to take me out.
Well, I'm sorry if I caused you that much aggravation. What are you doing, Riley?
Sleeping. that is about the sum and substance of what I have
That's
planned.
A major activity I could definitely relate to, just sleeping.
No, yeah. If the weather's good, though, I'll take my wife and daughter out on a picnic or something.
Oh, that's nice. You going to go sailing?
No. I'll go down to the water, though. There's a really lovely park down by the Hudson River about 2 minutes from my house.
I'll just
go down there. They got picnic tables. We go get some stuff. We sit around. We've done it before. It's a lot of fun.
I did have one friend, though. You're right, though, Mark Maron, who said to me, what on earth are you doing that for? Why don't you just stay in one place and sleep?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Mine's a kind of obsessive compulsive relaxation.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I have to fly to Minnesota today. I'm going to go at noon. After the show, I'm going to take a cab. I'm going to go to LaGuardia. I'm going to fly to Minneapolis, and I'm going to get there just in time to do a show for the University of Minnesota Hillel Group. I don't know when I became the Jewish guy. Come on. No, I mean, I talk about it.
Maybe
but I'm
that
really,
was that whole Jerusalem thing you did.
The Jerusalem syndrome. That is what it was. But that whole thing is about a non-Jewy Jew. You know, I'm not a Jewy Jew, and it's about a non-Jewy Jew, you know, trying to, you know, look at his whole life as a spiritual search without God, you know, without the Jewy things. And now all of a sudden, like, I get called to do all these Jewish things, and, you know, I'm not upset about it, you know, because the Jews are treating me well. But, I mean, I do have to fly to Minnesota to be a Jew.
Now, you're coming back when?
I'll be back on Saturday. I'm going to go right in and right out.
They're not asking you to read from the Torah or anything. Presumably, they're booking you as a Jewy, non-Jewy Jew.
Oddly, Sue, I have to do my entire bar mitzvah there.
You know, and, now, that I'd like to see.
And I'm freaking out because, like, I don't remember it. You know, I just did it for the money. You know what I mean? I had the guy teach it to me. I don't remember it.
Uh-oh.
The pressure's on, man. And now, like, you know, everything that's going on in the world, I have to comment on that to the Jews. It's all going to be very difficult. And then on top of all that, I'm going to be hallucinatory because by, you know, like on this schedule, by 8 o'clock, it's like 1 in the morning for us.
You better get some crash time on the plane.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
You're going to have to really sleep on the plane. They got your room and stuff? They got you?
Yeah. But the greatest thing about this job, actually, since I don't do drugs anymore, is that, you know, if you stay up long enough, reality and you know, and non-reality just kind of meld. So I wouldn't even know where I am, you know. I'll be on stage in Minnesota going, wow, this is amazing. I'm time traveling. Where am I? Yeah.
Hello, Atlanta.
Exactly. Houston rocks!
Well, speaking of the morning news and things that are going on in the news, Iraq, no surprise.
Is there still problems there?
Yeah, I'd say there's one or two.
Well, when is that going to stop?
Well, there are 10 weeks until June 30th, and that's the date, of course, for handing over power, at least the Bush administration's version of handing over power. They're starting to fudge about just how sovereign that new caretaker government will be. In fact, that government won't fully command its armed forces and won't even be able to put new laws into place.
So what are they saying? That it's really not going to be happening at all?
Can you feel the fingers in your back? I mean, that's essentially what they're doing. It's a caretaker government that will operate and function purely on behalf of the United States. This is, of course, part of the they put some restrictions on the plan that was negotiated by the U.N. Special Envoy, Lakhdar Brahimi, who essentially put together a plan that the United States signed off on to get rid of the Iraqi Governing Council and all that. But the United States apparently is a little bit nervous about whether or not the Iraqis can run their own country.
They have to be very careful about that, though, because that plays into this, you know, terrible sort of historical preconception and distortion of it, how the Arabs can't govern themselves, which the West has done for centuries. So that will play extremely badly in the Arab world.
Extremely bad.
And on top of that, they're reinstating some Ba'athist military people.
The Ba'aths are back.
So
yes.
So basically what they're doing is now, after all is said and done, they're just going to reinstall the Ba'athist and find a new Saddam that they're, again, friendly with.
Have you ever been in a situation where somebody else does something, and then they turn around and say it's your fault?
Yeah, my entire relationship.
Adult life.
my relationship right now is like that with my wife.
No, but see, now this is what they're doing with the Ba'athists. It was the United States that really purged, and through the Iraqi Governing Council, which they appointed, purged all of these supposed Saddam lovers from government posts inside the country.
Because they were Sunni Muslims, and so they were seen to be close to Saddam because he was Sunni.
Yeah.
But they were also, like, I guess you don't really want to trust the inner cabal of the past.
Well, it wasn't just the inner cabal. They literally got rid of everybody who was identified as
a Ba'athist. Well, that's why clerks, everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, what they've done now is turn around and accuse the Iraqi Governing Council of going overboard and getting rid of too many Ba'athists.
There was nobody to do any work. I had no idea there were so many. There's no one to run the copy machine. Yeah. Where are the Ba'athists?
What do you think the next step's going to be? That they're now going to have to start reinstating some of all the police chiefs because they fired all of them. And what we can see now this week, especially with some of those terrorist attacks that they're saying now in Basra, were not actually al-Qaeda. These were homegrown
terrorists.
And they're saying that these kind of terrorists that are affiliated to nothing and nobody are springing up as a reaction to what they see as overzealous use of force by the U.S. military, not the U.S.-led coalition, but specifically the United States forces. Unless they can get some version of justice or policing that is coherent and the Iraqi people feel safe, but yet not too much under the thumb and threatened that civilians, women and children, are going to get shot by U.S. forces, it's just, I can't see how it's not going to get just more and more acrimonious and more dangerous.
Well, it is going to get more acrimonious. It's already dangerous. A South African was shot. A South African security guard was shot in a supermarket.
What I want to know is when are they going to stop being so overzealous about the use of the word terrorist? I mean, like, it wasn't Al-Qaeda, obviously. It could, you know, I knew it wasn't Al-Qaeda, but you can't just call anything. Yeah, I did. I mean, how is it going to be? I knew it wasn't Al-Qaeda yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Because they're just going to keep, you know, the way that the press is going to operate, or not even the press, or the information that's being released, I think it's going to pander to the administration's agenda at all costs. And they're going to call anything they can Al-Qaeda anywhere in the world.
Well, you know how they turned this. They apparently detained somebody who they think was connected with the suicide attacks in Basra. And it turned out he had traveled to Basra from Fallujah. And Fallujah, of course, is the site of this whole siege that's going on.
Right.
And the speculation is that he and the other people that were involved in these suicide attacks were specifically upset about the U.S. show of force inside Fallujah. And that may get worse, too, because the U.S. military, the top Marine commander in Iraq, is not happy with the quality or quantity of weapons that have been turned in. Part of the agreement that they had for the truce to stop the U.S. offensive in Fallujah was a handover of weapons.
So, well, like when they're unpacking all their weapons, you know, they're like, come on, you got some in your sock. Come on, what else you got? Where's the missile launcher?
Yeah.
It is looking worse and worse, though. I mean, there are reports coming out of the British papers this week. Today, actually, there's something in The Guardian saying that the British Ministry of Defense is being pressured by the United States to move its crack forces further north, up
yeah,
into where there's been,
yeah,
you know, really extreme violence, because the Spanish troops, you know, are being pulled out by the government, by the Spanish government, and now they want, the United States wants the British Defense Forces to go into that vacuum that's now being created, but up around the very troubled town of Najaf, which is where the radical Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr is holed up, and the British don't want to do this. I mean, this is a typical British understatement. The British Defense Forces said they were unenthusiastic about filling the vacuum. If you're British, unenthusiastic means no way, Jose. Are we
not going in harm's way?
In there? That's a very nice way of saying you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
The thing I was saying about the terrorists is that, like, a lot of these people are Iraqi citizens who are political reactionaries. I mean, to call them terrorists is to make them, you know. Come on, say it.
Yeah,
Mark.
But the Americans have to stop being so violent.
We'll be right back here on Air America with the Presidential Day Planner shortly.
Air America Radio. Farther to the left than the John Birch Society.
Some mothers and daughters bond. Others are crazy glued. And now there's a new play about mothers and daughters that'll bring you to tears of laughter from door to door. The Daily News Raves from door to door is hilarious and deeply moving. It weaves the stories of three generations of Jewish women together with great artfulness. From door to door is a funny and heartfelt play that stirs up 65 years of family secrets and surprises. From the Cossacks to Ellis Island, from overmothering to single parenting, the Journal News calls from door to door a sweet play that glows with love and timeless values. It's beautifully performed, cheers the New York Post, and the Star Ledger applauds. It's like plunging into a bowl of your grandma's chicken noodle soup. See From Door to Door by James Sherman, directed by Joe Brancato at the West Side Theater. Call telecharge.com 212-239-6200. WOR's Joan Hamburg says you'll enjoy it from door to door.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose the advanced medicine in Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil gives you better relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastic to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Laura Flanders.
Let's transition and let's talk about another historical parallel to the situation we find ourselves in today. One of the things left for us to discuss here today is the parallels that many people are drawing to the situation in Vietnam. Is it a legitimate parallel? Does it work? Does it make sense?
Laura Flanders, Saturday night from 7 to 10 on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley. Good morning to you out there. It is now 21 past the hour, and it's time for our exclusive look into the presidential day planner, President Bush's day planner for Friday, April 25th. This comes right off of WhiteHouse.gov. It's his day planner. 8 o'clock a.m., the president. Almost outrun Mothra, then wake up. 8:01 a.m., initiate moisture check. God, what does that even mean? 9 a.m., pack inflatable toys for trip to Florida. Rehearse phrase in Spanish. Carry va increaser su taxos. Muy grande, muy grande.
Nice accent. Yeah.
Noon, speak at Nature Preserve in Naples, Florida. Tell crowd, I believe in rights for manatees and all other indigenous peoples. 2:30 p.m., call Brother Jeb. Check progress of Operation Eliminate Negro Vote.
Ouch!
2:45 p.m. Work with campaign advisors to come up with new secret name for Florida election swindle part 2. 5:30 p.m. Attend Victory 2004 reception in Coral Gables, Florida. Tell everyone plans for Florida election swindle part 2. 6 to 9 p.m. Mini vacation.
Uh-oh.
11 p.m. Give status report about human race to evil leader Zarkon in the fifth quadrant, Galaxy 9. That's a big day for the big president.
Muy bien, George.
Yes.
Muy bueno. Can you say bueno? Can you say muy bueno or muy bien?
Muy bueno would be an adjective, then you have to put a noun after it.
Muy bueno, huevos?
Muy buenos taxos.
Muy buenos taxos,
yes.
Very good taxes.
Very good taxes.
My brother can speak the Spanish, I can't.
It's a good language to, you know, mix up with English. It sounds very convincing.
Do you want to know what I did in high school? I actually got out of my language requirement because I was so afraid that, you know, I just couldn't deal with studying language. I can barely handle English grammar. So I took like the retarded test. You could take a test that would, you know, that would prove you to be incapable of learning a language.
Really?
Yeah.
My brother did that by getting 5% for his French exam. I think that proved him incapable.
Yeah, I did it, and I was able to dodge it. I'm sort of sorry I did
that. What did they do? They read something to you and asked you to repeat it, and you couldn't do it, and that labeled you as linguistically dysfunctional?
I don't know. It was like a written test, and in, you know, I just wrote things like, I not know this, you know, and I was able to get out of it.
Me not happy.
Me not happy.
Yo, Tarzan.
How use period?
I thought languages were fun. We had to learn Latin at the school I went to when we were 10. We thought it was great.
Man, that is so far away from anything I can understand.
I took
but
Latin for 3 years. I don't remember any of it.
I loved it. Then I took French and Spanish and German.
The only thing I thought was fun was, you know, drugs, girls, music. That was, I mean, never anything in school. Wait, Briefly, history. Briefly.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. Wait a minute. You took French, Spanish. When did you have? You had PE? Yeah, I mean, did
no,
you
I took Latin from when I was 10. We had to learn French. Everybody had to learn French.
God,
and from
so
when
good,
I was 12,
man.
I started learning German.
Wait a minute.
And then when I went to university, when I went to college, I studied languages. I hated speaking German. And so I switched and started learning Spanish from scratch when I was 19. We had to do two foreign languages on my university degree. So
my
then I ended up speaking four languages. And they're all completely useless to me now.
My wife speaks a little German, a little Italian. She got us through Italy. She comes. She's German. She comes from a German family. Isn't
it's
that
fantastic, though. I think that all kids, everybody should learn another language.
I think I regret.
And young.
I regret I didn't learn one. I really do. So I just wanted to sniff on the air.
It's lovely.
Pretty soon I'll get the hang of that.
Here's a tissue.
Okay, thank you.
Or actually, it's a napkin.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Or is it a piece of paper?
Whatever, I'll just do it in my hand.
Here's my shirt.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Somebody run to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Hey, how about the running mates for John Kerry? His four different guys have appeared with him this week. Four different white guys, I have to say. All of them either senators or ex-senators. Max Cleland, who's the triple amputee Vietnam vet, originally from Georgia.
You read that like these are stats.
Max Cleland. You know what? They feel like stats. But the
one
way,
win, Max Cleland.
They have a run winner.
I don't know his score, but anyway, John Edwards, Senator North Carolina. I'm just telling you guys in case you didn't follow it.
Break it down. What are the stats?
Bob Graham.
What does it say about
Florida Kerry? Senator Bill Nelson, also from Florida, also a senator. I don't know. I'm looking at these guys thinking, how do we really tell the difference and what really matters? Does anybody actually really care?
Do they match?
Who?
That's
the vice president is. I mean, do people ever go and vote based on who the vice president is? They might vote against Bush this year based on who the vice president is, but I don't know they actually care that much about the vice president.
Well, how many vice presidents can you name? Thinking back, I mean, how many can you really remember?
Henry Cabot Lodge, Lyndon Johnson.
Admiral Stockdale.
Oh, yeah, but he didn't make it.
He didn't make it.
But like Spiro Agnew, right?
Spiro Agnew.
Gerald Ford.
Al Gore.
Yeah.
Al Gore was the vice president.
Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
George Bush Senior.
George Bush Senior for years. He just said, when's my turn? When is my turn?
Maybe people are going to take this a lot more seriously now that they've seen what 4 years of Dick Cheney has brought them.
Yeah, well, now I think that the vice president's role has been redefined. I mean, now he's really in charge. So we better get some other candidates.
I'm looking at these and thinking, how do people make their choices? I mean, does John Kerry need to go someone who's a sort of an antithesis of himself? Does he have to go with someone who can speak in short sentences and is incredibly sexy and charismatic and pack a punch?
No, a little less got to be a little less charismatic.
Really?
Well, it's not going to work if you can't have the second guy upstage in the first guy. I mean, Kerry's a headliner. You got to have the opening act, man. You can't.
But two words will define this in the end.
Yeah.
Battleground states.
Right.
They're going to be looking for someone who appeals to constituents in states that are up in the air between Bush and Kerry.
Okay, so here, and then these four guys who appeared with him this week, they're talking Georgia, North Carolina, Florida.
There's a reason why Florida's in there twice.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
537 reasons, that's why. From the last election.
Yeah,
because it was so close. And Bob Graham has remained, even though he ran and got out of the race relatively early, Bob Graham has remained a very, very attractive potential candidate. Because he's not full of charisma, but he's a faction figure.
Been around for a while.
Yeah, he's been around
really
for a long
time. Stuff. The swing states are, I guess, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Nevada, Ohio, Tennessee, and West Virginia.
Right, so none of them are, in fact, where these four guys are from, so I don't know that.
But we've got Southern appeal with what's his name, Cutie Face. What's his
John Edwards. He's very smooth, isn't he?
Yeah, but I think he's very smooth.
I'm looking at the photographs here, and I'm wondering, based on sex appeal, which one people would go for.
But Edwards is
Bill
like,
Nelson.
Edwards is, I think that Kerry and Edwards would be sort of contentious, don't you? That would become sort of like a bitchy marriage eventually.
It's kind of like that game, though. You know, when you're sitting in a sports arena or something with your girlfriends, I'm sitting, and you look along a row, and you kind of go, death is not an option.
Yeah.
And you're like, which guy would you have to sleep with if you had to, just because you're killing time?
Right.
It's kind of like that with these four.
Well, who would you sleep with? Lay it down. What do you think?
Is your husband streaming on the internet?
I think it might be Bill Nelson.
Bill Nelson. Let me see a picture. You got a picture?
Uh-oh.
We got a picture of Bill Nelson.
He's got a full head of hair, does he?
You like astronauts.
I did say death is not an option.
All right.
He might take me to the moon.
Coming up. right after Sue's Dalliance, Marc Maron's Dream Diary, plus which party appeals most to the hip-hop generation. We'll get some answers in the Salon.com story of the day when we come back here on Air America Radio. But first, news headlines at the bottom of the hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Red Cross has come up with a new figure on fatalities associated with yesterday's big bomb blast at the North Korea train station. The organization's figures say only 54 people succumbed to the explosion. Early media reports had estimates at 3,000. The Red Cross also said that some 1,200 suffered injuries. This is the investigation into the blast continues. Unlike previous wars, Americans are not seeing as many photos of American soldiers who made the ultimate sacrifice. There's a good reason for that. The Pentagon has banned the media on the release of such images. The government yesterday renewed that ban, but because many of the photos have made their way to the Internet, several major papers expect to publish the pictures of America's war dead on their front pages today. And New York's famed Central Park was a scene of a love nest yesterday as two gay lovers, a 17-year-old boy and his 32-year-old preoperative transsexual mate, scaled a tree for the world to see their love for each other sexually. New York City police were held off for 4 hours before they voluntarily surrendered. A couple did it because the parents of the 17-year-old are against their relationship. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
I'm Mark Riley with Sue Ellicott and Marc Maron here on Air America Radio. A few weeks ago, John Kerry appeared on MTV's Choose or Lose campaign saying that people ought to pay more attention to hip-hop and rap music. The reaction of the right is the subject of today's Salon.com story of the day. And joining us to talk about it is Salon.com editor-in-chief David Talbot. David Talbot, good morning.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Good.
Before we start, we're going to listen to what Rush Limbaugh had to say. had to say about John Kerry and rap music.
So you haven't heard my take on it, even if you have heard it. This is John Kerry on MTV's Choose or Lose, which is an appropriately titled program for him to appear on. Choose or Lose. And the host was somebody named Gideon Iago. And Gideon Iago said, well, we know that you were into rock and roll when you were in high school, and we know that you play the guitar now.
Get on with it.
There was one picture of him strumming on a guitar. Are there any trends out there in music, Mr. Kerry, or even popular culture in general, that have piqued your interest?
Oh, sure. I mean, I follow, and I'm, you know, interested. I don't always like, but I'm interested. I mean, I never was into heavy metal. I didn't really like it. I'm fascinated by rap and by hip-hop. I think there's a lot of poetry in it. There's a lot of anger, a lot of social energy in it. And I think you better listen to it pretty carefully because it's important.
Get on down, John.
Well, I am telling you, just gag me with a spoon and end this.
Gag me with a spoon.
He's a batty girl now.
Pandering.
God, he'll just
this is a Sister Soldier moment and blew up. Poetry. He's fascinated by rap and by hip-hop. I bet. Can you just see old J.F. Kerry and Teresa riding around there in the Range Rover, whatever, out there on the spread, tuning in to hip-hop. What CD is in the player right now? What's a CD in the player?
Mm. Well, I never thought I'd hear Rush Limbaugh channeling Frank Zappa, channeling a valley girl.
Yeah.
Gag me with a spoon.
Go on, David.
What was your take on that?
It's Frank Zappa's daughter, by the way, Moon.
Well, actually, that was an interesting little clip you have there. But he went on to say, old Rush, don't stand up for white music, Mr. Carey. Associate yourself with rap. Now, that was edited from his website. So... Old Rush is playing the race card here. He invoked Sister Soulja, which was the moment in the Clinton campaign when Bill Clinton decided to disassociate himself from radical black cultural elements. And, you know, it's the Willie Horton card, too, that George Bush the First played against Dukakis in his presidential race. So there's nothing subtle about what Rush is doing here. He's saying that John Kerry is encouraging, as other people on the right have said, black culture. God forbid.
David, does he not realize that the most people who buy rap music are white kids?
Well, no, and that's what's so dense about this, of course. And a number of Republicans who are a little more clued in are worried that the Republican Party is going to cut itself off from the youth vote. So meanwhile, you have people like Republican National Committee Chairman Ed Gillespie pandering to that same MTV vote by going on MTV. And the Republicans, this is my favorite, have got an 18-wheel rig called Reggie the Rig that they pulled into Times Square and was pumping out hip-hop music to the unsuspecting youth who gathered around this truck. So they're trying to have it both ways, and obviously it's not working.
Well, you know, they also, didn't they 4 years ago feature The Rock? I was there. I thought I saw the man, the professional wrestler turned actor, running through the Republican convention in Philadelphia. But the larger question is, David, why should they worry about this vote? The turnout is usually pretty low, isn't it?
Well, but that it's always the holy grail. Every party, particularly the Democrats, but the Republicans too, always want to try and mobilize that vote. People think it's this hidden vote that's out there, and I think that it's true to some extent. It often goes the way though that their parents are voting. It's not, I don't think, necessarily the magic bullet for either party, and yet so many people don't vote. That, of course, any effort to mobilize some sector of the electorate is important.
How come isn't what he's saying, how come no one calls Rush on the fact that, you know, saying white music is almost like, he sounds like a white supremacist. It's almost, you can't be anti-rap without being anti-black on some level.
Well, exactly. And as you say, hey, my kids, I have two boys, that's all they listen to is rap, hip-hop music. You know, that is... and I'm white, and you know, most of the people who buy this music are white. So it's a little thick on their part to be alienating black and white voters. But you know, look, this is nothing new for the Republicans. They're you know, as Eric Bollett, who writes our story today in Salon, says, Republicans have never been able to rock. Why should they be able to rap? They Bruce Springsteen, President Reagan, back in his 84 campaign, tried to appropriate the anthem Born in the USA at his rallies, and Bruce said, hey, forget it, cease and desist.
Lee Atwater tried to rock once. Remember Lee Atwater trying to rock?
That's right.
Look what happened to him. It gave him a brain tumor.
That's a poor guy. And George W., of course, tried to use Sting, Tom Petty, John Fogerty, John Mellencamp, and Los Lobos in his campaign, and all of those musicians said, hey, that's our music, it's not your music.
Was that the first Bush campaign?
This was George the First.
When he lost?
Oh, yeah, I went to a rally of his in Denver, Colorado, and he's playing Lawrence Welk.
That was more appropriate.
That was scary, though.
Yeah.
But the thing about all of this is that Rush does touch on something, probably inadvertently, and that's that all politicians look kind of lame when they trot this kind of groovy music trying to appeal to young voters. Because, you know, having them talk about rap or play it at their events, whether they're Republican or Democrat, isn't it a bit like watching your parents make out? It's just kind of embarrassing. I mean, does it really make people go and vote for them?
Even Jack Kennedy, who was said to privately twist in the White House with Jackie, Jack was cool. Jackie was cool, but they're hot. But I don't know. Even that seemed a little, you're right, a little cringy. There's Bubba, though. There, Elvis, Clinton, of course.
You kind of believed that he rocked, didn't you?
Yeah, I kind of believe that, you know. I
just
like his music.
You know, I went to a party on the at the White House, and Kid Creole and the Coconuts were the entertainment, live. So, I mean, he did at least have some sensibility. But I'm curious about something, David. There have been studies that have shown that the hip-hop generation in particular is more entrepreneurial than their parents and than many other demographic cohorts. Why haven't the Republicans been able to tap into that entrepreneurial zeal?
Well, they are. They're trying to. There's a Republican club that is working on campus to do just this. And as I say, they've got their Reggie the Rig 18-wheeler pulling up. And they're warning. A lot of younger Republicans are warning their party that they better start doing something. Adam Hunter founded the Republican Club at Howard University in D.C., which is, of course, predominantly black, says within the Republican community they don't understand hip-hop. Republicans are trying to marginalize the hip-hop experience. They think it's just music and don't understand it's a full-fledged culture.
I think they might well understand it. It's just that what it represents to them is, you know, if they said that they liked it, they'd have to acknowledge that this music, the lyrics speak to an anger and disenfranchisement and people who feel that they don't have a voice. And they would have to kind of acknowledge that, you know, things are not working out for kind of enormous numbers of people in this country. If they're black, if they're Latino, if they're poor, if they live in towns where there are no jobs and they feel they can't get decent education. And they're completely marginalized.
Well, I think that's
they're
true.
In a bind. How can but they say they like rap music?
Like I said, they want it both ways. The Republicans who are younger and a little more clued in understand this is disastrous for them to alienate this vote, this whole part of America. But others, you know, they're old fogies. They're the guys who burned the Elvis records and the Beatles records. I mean, this has always been a trend, a segment of the Republican vote. You know,
their view of hip-hop is outdated as well. I mean, hip-hop is not, you know, just angry rap music. It's very broad, you know, cultural music at this
absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Outkast had the number one single, you know, this year, Hey Ya, which you guys, I know, like on your station.
And by the way, I think Hey Ya threatens no one.
Yeah. Well, it does. It threatens Joe Farah, who's a right-wing, you know, web guy. He runs the WorldNetDaily.com site. When the Democrats invited Hey Ya to come to one of their fundraisers, he let him have it on his website. He blasted them. He
about
said,
the pink gun?
Oh, the pink gun thing. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, he said they've declared themselves openly to be on the side of the enemy, the barbarians. I mean, there's another code word, savages.
Ooh, barbarians.
You know? That's right.
White music.
Such thinly veiled racism.
Yeah.
It's really, you know,
incredible.
Disgusting.
David Talbot, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
You take care. And, of course, that story is... on salon.com.
Salon, just in case.
I'm about to open up my dream diary, and we want to know whether you think hip-hop music or culture could affect this election. Culture, that's kind of broad. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the line right here on Air America.
Air America. We abound in pith.
Covad Broadband Service Rep Arne Lewick on music. On fashion. On art.
Love that guy.
And on business broadband.
Oh, the key to business broadband is the same as any business decision. You want the best product at the best price. At Covad, we have broadband that's built for business. Unlike the local phone company, which specializes in residential plans, and we have it for less. Hundreds of dollars a year less. And that's for broadband from us, the business broadband experts. Now, don't even get me started on Covad's selection of broadband services. Fixed IP addresses for firewalls, for web and email hosting. Well, the list just goes on and
Arne
on.
Arne Lewick on politics. Business broadband. Covad knows it like nobody else. To get broadband built for business with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee, call 1-800-555-0454 or go covad.com. That's 1-800-555-0454 or go covad.com. Not available in all areas. Saving based on published rates, March 10th, 2004.
Hello, this is Della Reese, and I'd like for you to meet Faith in Action. Faith in action means that people keep their independence. How? By getting help from volunteers. People of different faiths who shop, cook, drive, or just check in on some of the millions of Americans with long-term health care needs. If you're like me and have wondered how you can make a difference, volunteer with Faith in Action. They know how to use your time and talents right in your community. Even just a few hours can make a world of difference. A neighbor's independence depends on you and me. Faith in Action. Try it. Find out how good it feels at faithinaction.org or toll-free 1-877-FAITH-11. That's faithinaction.org or toll-free 1-877-FAITH-11.
We would go from venue to venue across the southern United States and travel in a van that ran both on biodiesel gas and also on straight French fry grease.
That's singer-songwriter Rachel Garland from Berkeley, California, singing the praises of touring on biodiesel.
Our objective was to spread the word that there are alternatives to petroleum.
Garland admits that people are overwhelmed when facing our eco problems, but grassroots education is key.
These local solutions will serve to inspire and activate us and energize us so that we can continue to spread these local solutions until they become global solutions.
Fill her up with alternative fuel online at
www.rachelgarland.com.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
The Majority Report.
Let's check out the WhiteHouse.gov website. Let's read what it says.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
America has a choice. It can continue to grow the economy and create new jobs, as the president's policies are doing, or it can raise taxes on American families and small businesses, hurting economic recovery and future jobs. What the? What the? This is preposterous. Why, a boulder dash is all I have to say.
Air America's Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
Forty-seven past the hour. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott here on Morning Sedition on Air America. We're taking your calls on hip hop and the election at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270, or whatever else you want to talk about. Right now, it's time for a new segment that I've been doing on the request of my therapist. I've been keeping a dream diary because I'm having some trouble sleeping and clearing my mind at night, and he thought it would be helpful. I went to see him yesterday.
Okay.
We talked about a lot of stuff, and maybe I'll get into it later, but we went over the dreams for last week for that, you know, and, you know, I'm okay. I'm all right. So let me try and read my scribblings here. All right, the dream starts, this is last night, with my face, like, in the ground, and I'm eating grass, okay? And I realize that I'm a llama, okay? I have long hair, it's soft, and I look and I feel fantastic to be a llama, you know? And then I realize I'm at the Neverland Ranch, okay? And then Michael Jackson, he comes up to me, and he starts, you know, and he starts dancing, right? And his face keeps changing. He turns around, it's Michael, only from 1980, when he's less scary, you know? And then he turns around, it's like Michael in the 70s with the floppy hat. And he says to me, he says, "Mark, Carrie better start concentrating on the swing states or he's screwed." And I say, "Wow, Michael." I said, "Wow, Michael, I had no idea you were so political." Only he didn't understand me because it came out in llama. And then he says, "Gotcha," and he starts petting me, all right?
Uh-oh.
And then I look down, I have two legs, and I'm 11 and drunk. So I start running, and I'm really fast, and I run toward a man in a suit, and he yells, "I'm an agent! Write a tell-all memoir called I Was Michael Jackson's Llama." And I laugh because it was, you know, I'm 10, and it was funny, or I'm 11. I'm trying to read this. Hold on. All right, but before I can reach him, Liz Taylor tackles me, and suddenly I'm being smothered in her sad old fat. And the sickly smell of passion makes me gag. I gasp for air, but none comes, and I pass out. When I woke, my sheets were covered in monkey hair, and my alarm clock was upside down.
Time for another session with a therapist.
Powerful
stuff. They're going to let you on a plane later?
Yeah. As long as I don't fall asleep. So we got callers. Jake in Manhattan. What do you have to say, Jake?
Comment.
How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm good. Listen.
What are you, the shower? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm actually in the tub. But I got. Listen, I want to help. I want to help Rush out because obviously the man has some problems.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't understand the whole hip hop connection and everything. Well, he can just ask his maid to help him out.
When's he asking her to get her drugs?
Well, yeah, she helped him out before. You know, she can understand this too. If she can get him the drugs, you know, she could explain the music to him.
You're making a weird connection and assumption, but I appreciate your call, Jake.
Listen.
We're going to launch a hip Rush to rap appeal.
Oh, wow.
Yes, there's questionable logic
the
there.
The pills, the rap, the maid, where does it all end?
Guns. Dave in Utah. Utah, I think that's a first.
Yeah, hi. Why don't you have Brian McNabb explain it to Rush? But, you know, he had all that quarterback deal going on.
You mean Donovan McNabb?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Donovan
yeah.
McNabb.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know, there is a very weird parallel there between what Rush said about Donovan McNabb and what he just said in that clip.
Yeah, Rush is
it's
a racist.
It's not weird at all.
Yeah.
It's not weird. It's part
pretty
of the
clear.
Compassionate conservative campaign. It's just spelled with K.
yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot, man. Spelled it with K.
Spelled it with a K.
Who are we taking now, Mark?
Let's go to James in Manhattan. James.
Hi, guys. I'm a Democrat. I'm a liberal. I hate Rush Limbaugh as much as anybody, but I also hate rap. I don't think you have to be black, anti-black on some level to dislike rap. I know that people constantly tell me, oh, there's a lot of rap you don't hear. You never hear it as ever on the radio, et cetera, et cetera. I don't question that. I'm not learned in it. I'm a musical theater lyricist, and as a generalization, I just dislike it because I think it's very insistently rhymed, very badly rhymed, very predictably rhymed. I don't care for the fact that the principal singer is not actually singing. And I'm not into it, you know. Hit me hard if you want to, but I it's not because I'm anti-black.
You know what? It's like I feel the exact same way about musicals.
I know. A lot of people do, and I don't think it's a matter of being anti-white, is it? I mean, I think Andy Razaf was a great, great, great lyricist, a black lyricist. And it's not God knows it's not about black culture. I'm very into jazz, et cetera. I'm the same way about a lot of white rock. I mean, I think that, you know, with the BMI strike and the rock and roll shift, there are a lot of wonderful rock lyrics, but also I think that the technical standard in the writing of rock lyrics declined, especially when people in rock bands started writing their own songs.
When they stopped playing their own instruments or singing without the machines.
Well, it's okay. You don't have to say that you dislike rap. As long as if you're John Kerry, you can dislike it. All we have to say is that you're fascinated by it.
Can I get the number? 866-303. Oh, you're going to do it? You go ahead. I didn't know if you can take a call or two. Go ahead.
You want to call us? 1-866-303-AAR0. That's 1-866-303-2270. We're taking your calls here on Morning's Edition on Air America, and we're talking about rap music.
You know, I was trying to figure out whether that guy found any redeeming rap music at all. You know, because when you condemn an entire genre of music, I get very nervous.
But it's broad. Isn't rap within the hip-hop umbrella? I mean, aren't we talking about something? Isn't rap specific? And that the genre of hip-hop is much broader than just rap music.
It is, and there's also the difference between hip-hop as a culture and rap as a music.
Right.
They're two separate and distinct things. But when people say they hate rap, and by the way, it's not, you know, I assume that last caller was a white guy, but they're black people. Older black people hate rap just as much.
But people just hate, they hate obscene lyrics. And
no,
then,
but
and
rap
that,
isn't just obscene.
Yeah, they see people who are put off or offended by obscenity, they assume that all rap music is obscene.
It's a generalization.
And, you know, people say, well, we can't understand the words.
Like Outkast, and I know that's very mainstream, it's not rap at all, really. It's R&B, it's hip-hop, and it's even got shades of Bowie in it.
But, I mean, he attacked it based on, it's not the poetry isn't this. And has he ever heard Chuck D.?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, if you want to talk about somebody being a great poet, remember, too, that there have been any number of poets in music, including Smokey Robinson, one of the greatest.
Okay, we've got Chris, our soundboard guy. Maybe he can get some rap music on
what
the
you,
show. Yeah?
What you,
Chris,
what you putting
about
up?
It?
You putting up in the club, man?
Don't put up MC Hammer, whatever
you
do.
Give us 50 Cent.
Okay, we're going to go to Vinny in Queens. Vinny, you're up and on the line with us. Question.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, I'm a conservative. I've been listening to you guys in the morning. You guys are real.
Hello?
Did you?
Yeah, I've been listening to your topic about rap music.
Okay.
It's going to have no effect in this upcoming election. And as far as rap music in general, I think it's horrible. I think it's very pessimistic. I think it's negative. It does nothing to showcase the people that do it. And I'm really surprised that liberals in general, including Mr. Kerry, who made such an inane statement on MTV, would embrace this kind of music.
How about the blues? You like the blues?
I do like the blues,
They're
yes.
kind of pessimistic, aren't they?
The blues are kind of pessimistic,
right.
But they were never so negative against their women, and they never glorified drug use, and they never glorified money.
They certainly glorified alcohol abuse.
That.
Vinny,
yeah,
I don't know what blues you were listening to, but trust me, you listen to Robert Johnson, you listen to any of those early guys from the 30s, they were all talking about drug abuse because alcohol is a drug.
And they talk about killing their women, too.
Yeah, they do.
A lot.
Have you ever heard the song Hey Joe?
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe Vinny's not with us anymore, but that was...
But how about the old Robert Johnson song about the gun? They definitely...
Yeah,
the
Killing Floor, all of that kind of stuff.
It's true, but I think that people are people who don't listen to a great variety of music are frightened by rap.
I think...
They listen to somebody say, oh, it's violent, it's anti-women,
it's pro-drugs, it's pro-violence,
and they assume it's true for everything, and they're afraid. Generally... They haven't listened to that much of it. And there is stuff that is offensive. There is stuff, especially as a woman, there is stuff that's offensive.
But it's like pessimism that he was talking about, I think. It's more anger, and there's a gritty honesty to some of it. The blues was not an angry music. It was really a music to elevate the spirit out of the pain.
It
that's
was lament.
It was, written.
It was all about lamenting your situation. But if you look at music videos, if you look at a lot of these hip-hop videos, they're party videos.
Yeah.
People having fun, people going to somebody's house and dancing, that
okay.
kind of stuff.
We got Ray in Queens. Quickly, Ray, what do you got?
Hello, yes. Good morning, guys. Excellent show. Love it. You know, all this talk about rap, the same rap that rap is getting now was given to rock music when rock music was starting to come out from the black community anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you had the Southern Baptist saying that it was the devil's music and it was hypnotizing the white kids and stuff, and it was really the British groups that embraced it, and, you know, and Elvis Presley took it, and all of a sudden it became accepted. So, you know, so I don't know where we go with this, but I do know that, you know, that's what happens all the time. It's
You're
nothing
right.
new.
A lot of it
in the black community, it's horrible.
You're right. A lot of it is just a fear of sexuality and people.
Oh, yeah, they thought
people openly talking about that. It's like, whoa, keep that buttoned up.
They thought Little Richard was the Antichrist.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, some people still think Little Richard's the Antichrist. Shut up. You know, I love Little Richard's stuff. I mean, I always thought the way he constructed his
without song. Little Richard, there's no David Bowie.
Yes,
I mean the what he did for sexuality and rock and roll music was like it changed everything.
Oh yeah, well and you know Hank Ballard.
You ever hear those guys talk? You ever hear like Little Richard and Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley sit around and talk? There's a documentary of them. They're like they stole it. The bastards stole it. From us. I get nothing.
Well, you know Hank Ballard, the guy who wrote the original Twist, wrote a song called "Work with Me Annie"
mm-hmm.
that was considered obscene at the time it came out. And it literally, there were Southern law enforcement people that went around confiscating copies of the song. And there were these white citizens' councils would send out these.
They pull people over, get out of the car. You got a record in there?
No.
I know the record's in there.
No, but they would go into record stores and do that.
I bet.
Yeah, they absolutely would. Still ahead, the morning devotional, courtesy of Marc Maron. And as women prepare to march on Washington for reproductive rights, author Will Solitan tells us why those rights are imperiled. This is Air America Radio.
You're driving home. Which route should you take? You're coming up to the exit. You have 10 seconds to decide. 9, 8, 7. Better tune into XM Satellite Radio with an entire channel devoted to 24-hour instant traffic and weather for your area, so you can always get non-stop, in-depth traffic and weather. This year, you'll get over 120 digital channels of music, news, sports, and talk. Check out XM Satellite Radio at stores like Best Buy and Circuit City. Required monthly subscription and hardware sold separately. Activation fee applies.
Have my car, and maybe I love you.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm Nick Cannon.
We're Rad.
What's up? I'm Beyonce.
Hey, I'm Kelly.
Hello, I'm Michelle.
And we're Destiny's Child.
What's up, y'all? It's Eve.
Hey, this is Meredith Edwards, the Rad. And I'm here to remind you that friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
In the next hour on Morning Sedition here on Air America, why you can't see America's war dead coming home. Plus, we'll take a certain George W. to Recovery Corner. But first, we have the headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Still no word on what led to that deadly collision of two trains at a North Korean station yesterday. Red Cross says 54 people were killed and close to 1,200 suffered injuries. Early reports pegged the death toll at 3,000. There's also speculation that perhaps the blast could have been an attempt on the life of controversial North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. He had been passed through the site of the blast just 9 hours earlier. U.S. Marines are giving insurgents just one more chance to cough up heavy-duty weaponry or else face an attack that could lead to an untold number of deaths in the strife-torn city of Fallujah. The American appeal comes on the heels of one made by city leaders who are seeking an end to the bloodshed. Some opposition elements have turned in dud rockets, rusty mortar shells, and grenades, but the Marines believe the rebel forces are armed better than what weapons they are willing to part with. Unlike previous wars, Americans are not seeing as many photos of American soldiers who made the ultimate sacrifice. There's a good reason for that. The Pentagon has banned the media on the release of such images. They renewed that ban yesterday, but because many of the photos have managed to make their way to the Internet, several major papers are placing pictures of America's war dead on the front pages today. Just in time for the November elections, the state of California is being told to drop the touchscreen voting machines. An advisory panel in the state says California should ban the use of the 15,000 touchscreen voting machines because the equipment malfunctioned in last month's primary. Kim Alexander is president and founder of California's Voter Foundation, a group that promotes the use of responsible technology in the voting process.
The bottom line is that it costs a lot less money to maintain voter confidence than it does to restore it. And if we want to maintain voter confidence, we need to back up every single electronic ballot on paper. And if we can't do that, then we shouldn't have any electronic ballots.
The state's voting systems and procedures panel says the machines made by Diebold Election Systems failed to perform last month and that many voters in San Diego County were turned away.
Aren't you tired of cynicism in politics? Aren't you fed up with people undermining our faith in the two-party system? Stand up and make your voice heard. Join us in protest against Bill Hilsman's damaging new book, Run the Other Way. This insider's view of our election process is not what our country needs right now. Bill Hilsman, campaign consultant to Paul Wellstone, Jesse Ventura, and Ralph Nader, is a major threat to our political establishment. His book, Run the Other Way, insists that consultants are out of touch, that polls are inaccurate, and that the true purpose of negative advertising is to intentionally keep people from voting. This kind of angry rhetoric is damaging to Republicans and Democrats alike. So, go to your local bookstore and purchase every available copy of Run the Other Way by Bill Hilsman. Then hide them, burn them, send them overseas, or mail copies to Republican or Democratic national headquarters. We cannot allow this dangerous book to remain on bookshelves everywhere. Thank you.
Run the Other Way, the new book by Bill Hilsman, now dangerously available at your local bookstore.
International Monetary Fund has issued a warning about the rising price of energy on the global economy. The organization says the current optimism over stronger economic growth could fizzle if there are new terrorist attacks or a huge spike in the price of oil. Geoff Lamb, vice president of the World Bank, in an interview with the Associated Press, says that despite concerns that U.S. jobs are going overseas, Americans need to support foreign trade.
For the United States, 70% of export growth is going to come from developing countries. So the same countries that sometimes are a bit of a concern about jobs going abroad are the markets of the future for the United States.
Finance ministers and central bankers from around the world will be converging this weekend in Washington, D.C. to discuss the prospects for a global economy. The 30-year fixed conventional mortgage rate continues to rise, climbing upward for the fifth consecutive week. Rate now stands at 5.94%. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Planet Jesus.
I never thought of the problems of this planet at all.
That's Fat Mike from the punk band NoFX and PunkVoter.com.
Well, PunkVoter.com is the organization we started after the 2000 presidential election, and we've been building it for almost 4 years now. We've got a couple hundred bands that all are taking a stand.
Billy Joe from Green Day, The Offspring, and Jane Wheeland from The Go-Go's have also jumped on the bandwagon.
No Doubt have just joined up with us, and the Foo Fighters.
I don't want to be in that ride.
What is George Bush doing? He's dismantling 30 years of environmental law. He's a scary man. He's not a compassionate conservative. He's a religious fundamentalist.
Check out www.punkvoter.com for news items and t-shirts for sale.
The more money we get, the more advertisement we're doing, and the more bands we can get on the road to educate the kids of America on what's going on.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tatmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tatmail.com, helping people and the planet. And the planet.
Well, good morning, everybody. Will you parents please settle down so I can take the classroom attendance? Thank you. Okay, here we go. Brittany's mom and dad.
Present.
Present.
Justin's mom.
Present.
Lisa's dad. I said Lisa's dad. Well, maybe he's on his way. I hope he makes it. Lisa really needs his support. You know, your life can be hectic, but that's really no excuse. You have to get involved in your child's education. It will make a difference, believe me, whether it's checking homework or visiting with the teacher. Be present in your child's classroom. There's always a seat open with your name on it. Well, look who just showed up. Lisa's dad.
Yes, I made it. Present.
There are many ways to get involved in your child's school. Discover how. Call 1-800-281-1313. Or visit www.schoolsuccessinfo.org. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and Partners for Public Education, a partnership for the NAACP and People for the American Way Foundation.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a five-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, why President Bush doesn't want you to see America's war dead returning home. Plus, I'll have our morning devotional. But right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Hello.
Hey.
We were discussing our weekends earlier. But you know what? There's something. We talked to Paul Begala about something. I've been talking about this for a couple weeks since we've been on the air a little bit. And people sort of to be kind of dismissive about this whole Diebold voting machine thing. But I've been getting information about this for like months and months and months. And they released some of the, you know, the hardware schematics of these machines, and they're easily tamperable, you know, and that you can just hack. Some of them actually have keyboards on the backside that you can sort of manipulate. Like the entire outcome, because like finally something's being done in California. California's Voting Systems and Procedures Panel grilled the Diebold election systems president Bob Yurosevich, and he's a guy. This is a Republican contributor, right? This is a guy that, you know, that has these machines designed, and they're easily hackable. And I'm just so happy something's being done about it, because ultimately, if it doesn't matter anything. It doesn't matter culture wars, campaigning, polls. Nothing matters if there can be a guy in a room somewhere at a keyboard going, okay, Ohio's done. You know what I mean? You can't. It's just, I'm so happy that something's finally being done about it, because all this manipulation gets a little tiresome, doesn't it, Mark?
Well, now, that means the Diebold machines are the ones that leave no paper trail, right?
They leave no paper trail, and they're just computers. So they need a paper trail. The guy who designed the machine that created, it was a computerized voting machine that had a paper trail, mysteriously, he was silkwooded.
he died in a car crash, right?
He was silkwooded, as I said. And I, you know, that's questionable.
But Paul Begala didn't buy your conspiracy theory on that.
It's not a conspiracy theory anymore. See, that's why I have the paper.
You're right that they're looking into the machines, but he doesn't believe that it's kind of the fix is in, that this Republican guy who runs the company, you know, intentionally wants them to be kind of hackable, that his Paul Begala, you know, the guy across
You can live in your little dream world if you want to.
Everything
but this is
flawed.
The way the big boys
Everything
play.
Is flawed. Even if the machines weren't flawed, there'd be some kind of human error. But, you know, given what happened in the last election, you are right to be concerned. I just say go easy on the conspiracy theory.
What, are you kidding me? They can't even let the coffin pictures come out.
Well, that is something that
is... That's a conspiracy, only it is, you know, done on behalf of the administration in policy and in statements.
Well, now it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, the Pentagon is furious. The Internet is buzzing. This widespread dissemination of photos showing the coffins of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq has just become... it's taken on a life of its own. All the nightly newscasts last night, apparently, with the notable exception of one network, put it on.
Network would that be?
Fox.
Uh-huh.
But everybody else showed photographs. The front pages of the daily newspapers here in New York have these photographs. And people, I think, are starting to ask themselves whether or not there is a genuine concern for the families of the past, of the dead. Or... We're in an election year,
right,
and it's all political.
Right.
And I think at a point, George W. Bush may have to answer some questions.
The manufactured denial factor. Like, sort of like, don't let them know that if you show them the boxes, they'll actually be able to connect death.
I don't want to get into complicated details, but let's just explain in case people have missed exactly what happened, that the Seattle Times on Sunday ran a front page picture of flag-draped coffins inside a cargo plane at Kuwait International Airport, covered with flags, and the woman who worked there has been fired for getting this photograph via a friend of hers to the newspaper. She said that she did it because she wanted to show the care and respect with which the military treats the remains of those who have died in the war on their way home. And it's counter to Pentagon policy. For the last 10 years or so, the military, the Pentagon, has not wanted photographs of dead military members to be released to the public.
Because that would mean people
were
dying.
But these rules were largely ignored.
Yeah.
They were largely ignored. And presidents usually appeared or often appeared at military ceremonies when bodies came
not
home.
This one.
George Bush has not. So I think it's legitimate that people are actually are questioning this. Like, you know, why would the Pentagon not want these to come home? Do they feel as though they're kind of on the hop and that everybody's going to, they're going to lose the hearts and minds of the American public?
On
they
the hop?
See kind of caught, yeah, kind of on the run.
Okay.
They only have one leg on this.
I thought that was a drug reference.
I don't do drug references. I missed out on
the hot.
You can safely assume
reference.
That most of my references are kind of drug-free.
I completely feel that this is them trying to manage truth in terms of people making judgments about what's going on in Iraq based on the reality of death. I think they do everything they can to not let Americans see the real repercussions of war.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, though. I looked at the Seattle Times website this morning, and they've got a lot of letters on this. First of all, they wrote their own explanation. They didn't just run a photograph because they felt that it needed some context. So they explained very carefully why they put this photograph in the paper. They thought it was very powerful. It was a chance to tell an important story. It showed the great care taken to honor the dead soldiers. And it admitted in its explanation that some people would see the picture as an anti-war statement, and some would also feel that it showed something that that people had been largely denied seeing, which is, you know, what happens to coffins on their way home. And there are some letters that are worth kind of reading out, I think, after I make the point that the Pentagon is saying this could be insulting to families. This is an invasion of their privacy. I've not seen any public statement from a family member saying, you know, this is outrageous, the Seattle Times shouldn't have done this. Now on the front page of today's New York Times have the photographs A small photograph, actually, not the same photograph as the one in the Seattle Times, and it's a front page picture in the New York
Post. New York Daily News.
Thanks, Mark Riley. But I don't see any outrage from the families.
Why would there be outrage from families? It's not like their labels are being disrespected or treated, you know, in an uncaring way. I mean, and as far as an anti-war statement goes, I would hope that on some level, almost anybody who is human looks at those coffins and on some level says, you know, this is bad.
I don't understand one thing. The Defense Department or the U.S. government, the Bush administration, whoever, doesn't want these things shown. Yet, it was the Defense Department that took 360 pictures. So why? Why would they take pictures if they didn't want any pictures taken?
Well, wasn't this, during the Vietnam War, I mean, I was very young. I mean, very young. I was like six. But I still remember body counts on the television. I remember footage of coffins coming home. I remember that, you know, all of that stuff was reported. And the impact it even had on me then was like, it was horrifying.
Well, that's exactly why they don't want to show it now, because it is horrifying. But let's go to our commander-in-chief on this particular subject.
Nobody likes to see dead people on their television screens. I don't. It's a tough time for the American people to see that. It's gut-wrenching.
Another point is that you're not seeing dead people. You are seeing coffins draped in American flags inside a cargo plane being respected. I mean, the front page of the New York Times shows a line of military employees in their camouflage and guys in their presumably Air Force uniforms, those kind of beige jumpsuits. They're standing at attention, or their heads are slightly bowed. We're not seeing dismembered body parts.
Well, I think that's what he was referring to, though. The president was referring to the dismembered contractors.
Yeah, but the way he's talking is as if what we're seeing in the photographs this week is the same thing.
Right.
It's not the same thing.
I think he really just wants to... Yeah, the reason that he doesn't go to military funerals and the reason that he doesn't want these coffins shown on TV is he does not want the people that are still on board, barely, with this war effort of his, to really connect the death of Americans in a major scale with this, you know, this war based on false premises.
It's just a sign that they feel vulnerable, though, isn't it? I mean, it's just that they... If it hadn't been the bloodiest month, they didn't feel... obviously they feel some sense of public support is about to crack or is already cracking.
He's not gone to a funeral since day one of this entire thing. I mean, how is that even possible?
I guess there'll be so many to go to right now, he can't fit them into his schedule.
It sounds like he's made a conscious effort and a conscious policy not to go to these things. And I think it's going to hurt him politically as we go further down the road.
I hope so. We'll be back after this with my morning devotional and other things here on Air America's Morning Sedition.
And then I woke up.
Air America Radio.
Wait. And then I woke up.
No, Mr. Rose. You're not just having a nightmare.
Integrity first. Service before self. Excellence in all we do. These are not just words. These are our core values. Values by which each and every member of the Air Force Reserve lives. So whether we are deploying humanitarian aid, providing relief to citizens who become victims of natural disaster, or defending freedom wherever it's threatened, the men and women of the Air Force Reserve are there, protecting our values and serving our country. And now you can become a member of the Air Force Reserve. By committing as little as 1 week of the month and 2 weeks a year, you can become part of an organization that will impact your life and your country. Find out firsthand what our values mean to you. Speak with an Air Force Reserve representative today. Call 800-257-1212 or visit our website at www.afreserve.com. Air Force Reserve, above and beyond.
I was at this bistro, and when the waiter brought my soup, I asked where my salad was, and he said, soup doesn't come with salad. Can you believe that? I'm busy trying to sell my house, and he thinks I have the time to order salad separately?
Unlike limited services brokers, when you sell your house, Coldwell Banker handles the transaction from start to finish, making the process a lot less nerve-wracking. Coldwell Banker. Visit coldwellbanker.com. All offices independently owned and operated, except offices owned and operated by Energy Incorporated.
Hi.
I want to thank you for remembering to recycle, and I want to let you know the recycling program has been completely restored. Every week, we're now collecting glass bottles and jars, along with plastic bottles and jugs, metal cans, aluminum foil, beverage cartons, and drink boxes. And don't forget to recycle your mixed paper and corrugated cardboard. Just set out recyclables in clear bags or your recycling containers. If you have any questions or need container decals, please call 311. Thanks for doing your part, New York.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
Randy Rhodes.
See, this is the thick of thinking people have. They think that Osama is the problem, which is true, and that we should attack Iraq. That right there should tell you everything you need to know about what is going on in this country and why it's wrong. Say, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. The Germans declared war on us, which most people don't realize. Let's attack Mexico.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron back here on Air America's Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. You know, and I just got something in from our producer. This is actually press from today. The Vatican today barred lay people from giving homilies. Is that how you say it?
Homilies.
Yeah. Homilies, barring non-Catholics from taking communion and doing things like our daily devotional. The we've been barred from.
So you're done.
The Vatican's banning outsourcing. Is that what we think?
Yeah, kinda, I guess. I didn't know there was a mad rush for non-Catholics to take communion and do other holy things. But
well,
you know,
why are they doing that?
I don't know, Sue. I didn't read the whole story. I was just
the producer just said read the first sentence.
No, it had direct connection to my morning devotional.
Oh,
because you
sorry.
See what? Have you made that connection yet? That the reason I was saying it is because I was setting up the morning devotional.
I'm sorry. It's just too early. Give me a coffee.
So that means that maybe we can't do that. You know what? Let's
do it anyway.
Let's go ahead and do it.
Come on.
Today's morning devotional. Each day on Morning Sedition, we join hands and humbly ask the Heavenly Father for his guidance in the coming day. Oh, higher Father, we offer this prayer for John Kerry to aid in his search for a vice presidential running mate. People have been talking about Max Cleland, John Edwards, or Bill Richardson. Good guys. Even John McCain, though that's getting a little Vietnam heavy for my tastes. He and Kerry would be like seeing the Deer Hunter in Full Metal Jacket back to back. But someone with a little bit of charisma wouldn't kill him. Lord, like maybe someone like Hillary Clinton, only male from the South and not Hillary Clinton. Or someone like Howard Dean, only from a swing state, taller and not Howard Dean. Because this is important stuff, Lord. Al Gore was in trouble, then he picked Lieberman, and now we're in trouble. I guess what I'm trying to say is, Lord, deliver us from all Liebermans. Amen. And I don't know what the Pope's going to say about that, but, you know, there it is. It's done. God's will be done.
It's time to get your bus tickets, your train tickets, and your posters on a stick sorted out for Sunday. This Sunday, a coalition of abortion rights advocates holds the March for Women's Lives in Washington, D.C. And joining us now by phone to discuss the politics of abortion is Will Salatin. He is the chief political correspondent for Slate Magazine Online and the author of Bearing Right, How the Conservatives Won the Abortion War. Will, has the right really won the abortion war in this country?
Well, they haven't won it completely in the sense that they haven't yet overturned Roe v. Wade. They're on their way to that. And what they've done in the meantime is that they have restricted abortion in all kinds of ways while nobody's been noticing. You know, the public thinks that Roe v. Wade is safe and therefore everyone has access to abortion. Meanwhile, you know, doctors are disappearing all over the country. You can't get an abortion in a lot of places. And, you know, there's parental consent restrictions everywhere. There's bans on public funding of abortion everywhere. And we just signed two federal laws restricting abortion.
Are the doctors disappearing because they're afraid of being shot or they've been shot?
Yeah, that's some of it. There's also a lot of state laws that get passed to try to make it difficult for doctors to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Bush is on a campaign, as he puts it, to create a culture of life. And that entails getting rid of abortion to the extent he can.
Isn't it sort of messy and awkward because it's been so polarized by calling the two sides, first of all, calling it an abortion war, secondly, that somehow it's been made to look as though people are either anti-abortion or they are pro-choice, and it seems as though it's a bit more complicated than that. People, you know, a lot of people just don't like the idea of abortion, so they're kind of nominally anti-abortion, but they just think that women should be able to choose for themselves. How?
Yes,
isn't there anybody in the middle who can make people see sense?
You're absolutely right, Peter. It's very important for the marchers this weekend to convey exactly what you just said, that it is possible to be anti-abortion, that is, I would not have an abortion for myself, I don't like it, and pro-choice, that is, it's even if I don't like it, that doesn't mean that I should cast my judgment on someone else and legally prevent her from getting an abortion. And I think most of Americans do think of themselves as anti-abortion, but pro-choice, but tolerant. And it's very important for the marchers to give those people a feeling that they can call themselves and be pro-choice.
Well, maybe the pro-choice people should start calling themselves pro-tolerance.
Right. Choice was supposed to mean that. That's definitely the idea. And, of course, the other side then adopted the name pro-life. And, you know, Barney Frank had a great line about pro-life. The congressman from Massachusetts, he said that the people who call themselves pro-life actually believe that life begins at conception and ends at birth. And that's the point at which the Republican Party stops caring about them.
But now that this momentum of the conservatives and the right has really taken hold legally, I mean, you know, what kind of actions need to be taken to, you know, to stop it?
Well, you know, the last time that the right to abortion was under this much threat was in 1989. The Supreme Court had handed down the decision, basically inviting the states, hey, pass all the abortion laws you want and we'll see what's constitutional. And there was a huge pro-choice uprising, and there was a massive march on Washington by pro-choice people, and all kinds of people who are basically pro-choice but never cared about this issue. You know, they'd vote on jobs, they'd vote on foreign policy, they'd vote on some other issue, not this issue, suddenly started to care about this issue, and they told the politicians, you take away our right to choose, and we're going to take you out of office.
Mm-hmm.
And they elected, in Virginia, a black man governor. That's the first time and the only time it's ever happened in the history of the South. And it scared the bejesus out of the Republican Party. And, you know, Shrub's father and all the other Republicans backed down for a few years because they were so scared of that. And that needs to happen again. And it can happen if people show up and they let the politicians know they will vote on this issue.
Will Fouten, you've written the book Bearing Right, How the Conservatives Won the Abortion War in America. And there's this big march taking place this Sunday in D.C. What difference, if any, do these marches make? I mean, is it just to take the pulse of how many women actually care enough to go and march?
Yeah, that does matter. It matters. Remember, this is an election year in which everyone is paying attention to, quote, the base. That is, you know, not so much swing voters, but how many people can you count on to show up on one side or the other? It matters how many people show up at this march. The media will take notice. There will be a lot of counting of the crowd. And, you know, the TV cameras will be rolling, and they will be showing all of the signs and banners and stickers that everyone's wearing. They'll show what you're chanting. And one of the risks of this kind of thing is, people like to show up at a march and say what makes them feel good. And there have been past marches where people showed up at these pro-choice marches and wore stickers like, you know, abortion on demand and without apology. You have to remember this is a media event. So these marchers have to remember they are speaking to middle America, and they need to persuade and not just say what makes them feel good.
But that's the problem I have with media coverage of these kind of events, is that the people who are the biggest screamers and have the most provocative banners are the ones who, you know, who are kind of up there on the TV screen, and they, some ways, they can be very, they can be counterproductive.
Yes, those people can, and they need to restrain themselves and remember and be disciplined. But it's also true there are some very smart people in the pro-choice movement. In 1989, that last big march I was telling you about, NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, which is now NARAL Pro-Choice America, came out there with a whole bunch of signs and banners that said, "Who decides, you or them?" It was a very careful message that was designed to appeal to what, you know, what you were just calling the pro-tolerance people, the vast swath of middle America that believes that I'm maybe against abortion, but people should have the right to choose.
Do they, and, though? Does the vast swath really believe that you have the right to choose?
The vast swath, what they believe is they don't like abortion, and they do not consider themselves feminists. You talk about women's rights, that will not appeal to them. But if you tell them, keep the government out of this issue. See, those people are a little bit conservative. They don't like the government messing around, but they don't. It's not just they don't want the government taxing you. They don't want the government telling you what to do in the bedroom either.
So, well, we've got two federal laws that have been passed under Bush. One is the ban on so-called, partial birth abortion situation, so-called partial birth abortion, and then the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. Where do you go next? Where do you think they're going
to
go?
Oh, the next thing they're going to go to is something called the Child Custody Protection Act, which basically will throw you in jail if you help somebody else's minor daughter under 18 years old go to another state to evade a parental consent law. She's afraid to tell her mom. You say, look, I'll help you. You take her over a state line to another state that doesn't have that law. You get thrown in the slammer. And the reason they're going to go there is because this parental rights stuff is a big winner on the right. And that'll be the next bill they go to. They've also got some other bills to sort of make it easy for doctors to refuse, for whole hospitals to refuse you an abortion, and get away with that. So that's the next thing on their agenda. And the big thing, we haven't had a resignation from the Supreme Court in 10 years. There will be a resignation during, if Bush gets reelected, during a Bush second term, and you know who he will appoint.
Will, last quick question. Are you going to the march?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Thank you very much for joining us. Will Salton, Slate Magazine writer and author of Bearing Right, How the Conservatives Won the Abortion War.
Still to come on Air America Radio, the latest from Iraq. Plus, Mark Maron reaches out a helping hand in Recovery Corner. But first, news headlines on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says the Bush administration sees no reason to reinstate the draft system, but is pushing for improved Pentagon management for the 1.4 million strong force to meet wartime needs. Members of the House yesterday gave the green light to a measure setting the stage for special elections if a terrorist attack kills 100 or more members of Congress. Disturbing news for those who travel by air in the states. Homeland Security Department's chief investigator says airport security screeners perform poorly, whether they're government or privately employed workers. According to broadcast reports this hour, that blast in North Korea leveled some 1,850 buildings in its proximity. Red Cross says only 54 people died in the explosion that injured 1,200. The blast occurred when two trains collided in a train station near the China border. And Haiti's new government won overwhelming support from the international community at a joint conference of government and donor organizations in a Caribbean nation yesterday. UN has appealed for $35 million in emergency aid. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Breast cancer. Words that can provoke despair. But since 1993, a dedicated group founded by Evelyn Lauder has been working to make certain no one ever has to hear those words again. Hello, I'm Kate Burton. The Breast Cancer Research Foundation, now in its 10th anniversary year, is proud to have raised more than $70 million. This year, 87 cents of every dollar you donate to the foundation will go directly to breast cancer research and awareness programs. In the U.S. alone, nearly 40,000 women and men die from breast cancer each year. You can do something powerful. Your support will help us achieve prevention and cure. Let's give breast cancer the punch it deserves and knock it out for good. For more information, call toll-free 1-866-FIND-A-CURE or visit www.bcrfcure.org. That's 1-866-FIND-A-CURE or bcrfcure.org. Thank you.
Good morning again and again and again. Good morning if you're just coming back or you're just starting to listen. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America's Morning Sedition. That guy we were just talking to about pro-choiceness.
Will Souten.
Will Souten, the writer. What's the name of his book?
It's called Bearing Right, How Conservatives Won the Abortion War.
See, I really think that it's a part of a larger conspiracy on behalf of the right to allow as many unwanted children to be born as possible so they're sad and a little desperate and they're not emotionally together and they're needy, so they are easily converted to Christianity and the Christian rights objectives.
And then they become soldiers in the United States Armed Forces.
Or just soldiers in the armies of the Christian right, because, you know, Tim LaHaye's got a plan. Anyways, moving on. I'm sorry, you know, we'll get back into that.
We do have to get back into that. You know, this June 30th date for handing over power in Iraq is getting closer and closer. There's 10 weeks left. And yet, the Bush administration has no clue who they're turning over power to on June 30th. And that power, such as it is going to be limited. The government will not fully command its own armed force. We're talking about the Iraqi government that replaces the Iraqi Governing Council. They will not control the armed forces. They will also not be able to order around U.S. troops, which is a very sore point. Sue, you brought it up, I think, last hour, the idea that American troops may act in a certain way or may have a particular objective or start an offensive.
No,
and the Iraqi people, this Iraqi government that's coming in June 30th cannot stop them from doing that.
It's a bit of a concern because, you know, internationally, the U.S. troops are seen as heavy-handed. I mean, there's always this sort of rivalry between, you know, our troops are better than your troops. But over the last few weeks with the escalating violence in Fallujah and Najaf, you're hearing that a lot.
But are they just saying, basically they're saying we're not going to make the deadline, aren't they? Am I missing something? Aren't they just saying, isn't this just a way of rephrasing?
They won't say it, though.
That's no, but right. I mean, but isn't that what's happening, Mark? I mean,
yeah, it is.
So the deadlines are kind of a transition deadline to the real deadline when they figure out how it's going to work.
They're basically saying we're going to meet the deadline, but we're not going to do what we said.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
At all. So
yeah, exactly.
It's like a way of negating the deadline through, you know, double talk.
You know, it's like handing in three pages of a four-page essay in the middle of a sentence. You trail off, go, oh, must have dropped the other one.
Right. Yeah. Almost, but they're not even doing that. They're basically not doing anything differently than they're doing right now, are they?
Well, you know, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is asking some of the same questions you're asking.
Uh-huh.
Because the details of this plan were presented the last couple of days in front of the committee, and the committee members aren't happy with it. They're saying, well, you know, why do you not know yet who it is that you're handing over power to?
Because they're not done reprogramming Saddam yet. They're going to lobotomize him, put a remote control in his head, and he's going to go out there and go, America good, I'm back, we like America good.
Forget how unhappy the committee members are. I mean, the people in Iraq are going to be furious.
Well, they're not furious already.
Ready,
no, but this is escalating. Are they saying that they're going to have this, you know, not quite hand over, subject to approval of the people who are on the interim committee now, and that the Iraqis that no, exactly. So that's not going to play very well, is it, with the Iraqi public?
And they're dismantling the coalition, right? So there's not going to be any coalition. All that they're doing is they're reinstating some Ba'ath military personnel, and then they're going to have Bremer stay there, and they're going to let the U.S. military dictate whatever needs to be dictated for everybody in the country. So the only difference is they've added a couple of Ba'athists. So they're returning back to what Iraq was before Saddam, and maybe one of these guys will step up and be the new Saddam and play along with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's also this talk about having to add 10,000 more troops.
McCain said that,
yeah,
right?
Senator John McCain from Arizona says, bringing peace and democracy to Iraq will be, and I'm quoting him, very expensive, difficult, and long. And he's calling
bloody. You forgot bloody, how bloody bringing democracy places.
Yeah. And he also says that domestic spending is going to have to be cut to pay for the war.
So now we're going to have to go back to sort of like rationing?
Not that far, hopefully. But he's talking about cuts.
I said that like I was alive during World War II. You mean we're going to have to, you know, watch our...
You were alive during gas rationing, though, weren't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember that, the lines,
yeah,
the gas lines.
He had a bicycle then, he was fine.
I had a tricycle. No, that was like 73 or 70.
Well, no, it was as late as 79.
Right, I remember it.
Yeah, odd even days thing.
Yeah, and the gas lines, people freaking out and
fighting and all that. Well, it may not get that desperate, but McCain is saying that President Bush has to be frank with the American people about the cost of what is going to have to go on. And he thinks it's necessary. He says that it is absolutely necessary for the United States to see this mission in Iraq through, but he says that the administration's got to be a lot more forthcoming about what the costs are and what's going to happen here.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah.
Well, they said it could cost like $89 billion. I mean, how are they going to, like, let out? These guys, they're so deceiving, and they're willing to let U.S. troops go without supplies that they need or without the proper number of troops to do this job that they need to get done because of its election year. And if he asks for more money, you know, he will be looked at as this, like, you know,
a spendthrift president.
This deficit-building freak.
I think it's really at a critical stage this week. I mean, you look at how the papers covered the bombings in Basra earlier this week. It's not even on the front pages anymore. I mean, 68 people were killed. Children were killed on buses. And yet, tabloids in Europe and even some of the broadsheets are playing that story kind of way down. There's a kind of public interest fatigue going on.
But is that a public interest fatigue, or is that somebody deciding that the news is no longer front page news?
But that's the same thing. If they feel they're not going to sell their newspapers by putting that on the front page,
so you don't think conspiratorially at all?
The world in general.
Couldn't that just be that they are, you know, in cahoots with, you know, sort of like making this secondary in order to...
I don't think so. If it were just from the right-wing press or in the left-wing press, if it were just kind of one-sided and obviously political, then, you know, then I might start thinking that way. But when it's across the board...
Right. Why doesn't
the story has been kind of relegated? Then it's you know, at the same time as the British government and the military are going, whoa, the Americans are trying to get us to push our troops kind of further north into the really dangerous areas. In other words, that's a sign that the Americans, it's a kind of a cry for help. We haven't really got a lid on this stuff. Would you guys come in and fill in the gap because the Spanish are leaving? You know, people are...
Well, if they put it on the back of the papers, though, how does that not play into the fact that they don't want, you know, the people of England to think, you know, more along the lines of, we need to pull out now?
Sorry, if they do what?
If they constantly push these stories back, mm-hmm. like the stories we were just talking about, how could that not be seen as the British press trying to, you know, keep the public in Britain from not, you know, actually saying we want out of the war now?
I don't know if they... I hadn't really thought about it that way. I don't know if they think that they're trying to say that it's kind of, you know, out...
Because if they keep the press... Like, if they had that, what you just said, on the front page, and you're saying that a lot of this stuff is moving towards the back of the paper about the, you know, the British armed forces being moved into more dangerous areas. I mean, what about public outcry in Britain around, you know, Britain's involvement in the Iraq War? Where does that stand at this point in time? And I'm just seeing the conspiracy as, if they're not headlining stuff like that in the British papers, how does it not play into the conspiracy that I think is there already?
I don't know. I feel like George Bush at these.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If I had had time, that's kind of not popping into my head. If you'd given that to me ahead of time, Mark.
But I agree with you. I mean, Al-Sadr still holed up in a compound, and where is he? I mean, all that stuff is still going on, and now we've got the coffins on the front page.
And the Americans are still threatening Fallujah. They're still saying we're not getting the weapons that we think that we should be getting. You guys are shooting missiles at us, and you're not turning in any of them. And if you don't, we're going to start the offensive.
For some reason, I can't not see it, like an interrogation in my head. Just some guy, you know, it's like, you know, putting a gun on the counter and then a grenade and like, come on, okay. And then putting like then a
it's
rocket
not exactly
launcher.
Guns for toys like we had here in New York. There is some good news and some bad news coming out of Iraq. And we should let people know the kidnappers have freed three hostages, one Palestinian and two Swiss nationals. The Palestinian apparently was accused of spying for Israel at one point. And if the risk to foreigners in Iraq wasn't clear enough, a South African security guard was shot and killed in a Baghdad supermarket on Thursday. There's no word on whether or not the hostage takings and the violence that have taken place against not the troops, but, you know, people that are working for these private companies have slowed the steady stream of foreign workers and foreign soldiers who are coming to Iraq to make money.
Of course it has. I mean, GE pulled out, Simons pulled out. I mean, everyone's pulling out.
Yeah,
I
but
mean,
not the security firms. They're not pulling out.
They're the only ones going to be left. They're going to pull all the troops out and just put in privately funded corporate troops.
To look after the coalition forces?
It's all going to be a paid army eventually. It's going to be like an all-privatized army. Hey, okay, so what do you think? Should Americans be allowed to see their war dead coming home? That's our leading question. Please call us at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270, and let us know what you think here on Air America.
Air America Radio, the voice of Counter Culture. Planet Jets.
Planet Check.
Eco victory for Yellowstone Park. Federal Judge Emmett Sullivan says no go to snowmobiles.
The judge determined that the ruling of the Bush administration was in violation of the intent of the Organic Act of the National Parks. The levels of snowmobiles in either case were outrageously high, given the mandate to protect Yellowstone irreparably for future generations.
That's Alfred Runty, author of National Parks, The American Experience.
The big environmental hazard has been to the wildlife and to the quality of the air. But there's a more fundamental issue, and that is, why have snowmobiles in the national parks in the first place? We're supposed to go there and enjoy nature.
The court ruling marks the beginning of a phase-out of snowmobiles in Yellowstone.
Snowmobiles are cut back in half for this year, from 900 to 460-some machines. Next year, there will be a total elimination of snowmobiles.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Can you hear me thinking about you?
Hi, this is Lila McCann for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in my life, but nothing is more important than life itself. When you do drink and drive, you risk not only your life, but the lives of everyone on the road. So choose a designated driver. Designated drivers rock.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, and the National Association of Broadcasters.
All love farm. Oh, yes. That's so long.
Sparkling French fries. Just one way to really impress kids. Even better, just one of the many ways to spend time with them. And when you spend time with kids, anytime, it helps prevent crime. Call 1-800-WE-PREVENT for a brochure or visit WePrevent.org to find out more. Brought to you by McGruff, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Remember the good old days when ice cream cones cost a nickel? When you could walk to the corner drugstore and the pharmacist actually knew your name? Well, we do. It was all the way back in 1927 when pharmacist Milford Harris invented Pink Salve, spelled P-I-N-X-A-V, to heal his children's diaper rash. And Pink Salve also works for all forms of skin irritations, for babies, active adults, and those in their golden years. Well, just like the horse and buggy, the independent pharmacy is slowly disappearing. But not Pink Salve. We aren't owned by a huge pharmaceutical corporate giant. We aren't going public. We are here for one simple reason: to help heal your baby from the misery of diaper rash. If Pink Salve is not available at your local drugstore, you can buy it online at www.pinksalve.com or just call us toll-free at 888-4-PINK-SALVE. We are very proud of Pink Salve and grateful for the opportunity to offer you and your family this outstanding product.
The O'Franken Factor.
On Friday's O'Franken Factor, the long-awaited return of the lunchtime classic, Mastication Theater. And Joe Connison is going to rip the lid off some really, really big lies. The O'Franken Factor, dominating America's earwaves since 2004.
Al Franken and Catherine Lanfer. Weekdays noon to 3 on Air America Radio.
It's 14 before the hour. I'm Mark Maron, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley, here on Air America, Morning Sedition. Please give us a call at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We're talking about the photographs of military coffins coming off the plane that are on the covers of many papers in the country today, and also that the Bush administration's policy on these photographs is for them not to be shown. They have done everything they can to not let these type of pictures get out. What do you think about that? I quickly want to read an email we just received. Show feedback email. I'm very disappointed in the quality of this show. Three people sitting in the studio laughing does not make a funny show. If you are mixing comedy with information, that's one thing, but this show is a complete waste of time. When are you coming to the Philadelphia area?
Let's just give our email address. Maybe they want to continue this. Sedition@airamericaradio.com.
We were laughing that much. Anyways, this is a good time for this because I'm a little hurt. I'm Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
How are you? It's time for Recovery Corner. Every day in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I'm offering my sponsorship to one George W. As a fellow brother in recovery, we both know how important it is to keep our promises. So here's what's concerning me. George, you've been saying for months that the U.S. governing officials would get out of Iraq June 30th. I mean, gone. I mean, read my lips. Out of there. But just yesterday, your people said maybe it's going to take longer. I mean, come on, buddy. Don't do that. Is this going to be another one of your half-truths, like Clear Skies Initiative or Leave No Child Behind or I Will Memorize the Capitals of Europe? I mean, let's, please, George W., remember, half measures avail us nothing. When you say things like we're not leaving June 30th, I start thinking maybe you didn't have a plan for Iraq. And that couldn't be true. I mean, I blame the enablers you hang out with, Cheney, Wolfowitz, your wife, Laura. These people don't want the whole truth. You need to erase them from your life. People, places, and things, buddy. Remember? Remember like you did your arrest record from years ago? Remember? Erase it. And remember, buddy, I'm here for you. All right? Just don't lie to me. It's about you know, honesty. Ruthless, deep honesty. And also remember, you know, first things first, live and let live, let go and let God. God doesn't wake up and think he's you. You got one foot in yesterday and one foot in tomorrow. You're peeing on today. Think. And, you know, stay sober today, buddy. All right. That's Recovery Corner.
Maybe you could send us some T-shirts with some of those slogans.
I can't do that. I can't bring the program into public controversy.
Oh,
I can't offer my help.
All right, then. Fair enough.
So here we go. Where are the calls? We doing it? Seth in New Jersey, what do you got?
Morning.
How you doing, man?
I absolutely think the photographs, the images should be shown. I think that it's offensive that they're not shown. These men and women are over there getting maimed and losing their lives every day, and I just think that American people, most of them, are apathetic and have their head in the sand because it doesn't affect them. And if they start seeing these images, they might wonder and worry that this president, if he gets elected, will reinstate the draft, and it might be their 10-year-old a couple of years down the road that'll be over there.
It'll make them rethink it.
So.
Oh, that was a little abrupt, but thank you, Seth. It's okay.
How about we go to Jason in Chicago? Jason, you're on the air with us at Air America.
Good morning, all.
Hi.
Hey, it's great that you guys are back in Chicago. I love listening to you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, great.
About the coffins and the front pages, I mean, why shouldn't there be? I mean, all it is, it's death. Death comes to all of us. Why are we so fearful of death? Is this part of the fear of the war and terrorism that Bush is running on, the fear of a coffin being shown on the page? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think that he's afraid that people will start to realize people are really dying.
How about you were in the Marine Corps, it says here on my screen. Do you think that the people who are serving in the military would want these photographs to be shown to the American people or not shown?
I'm not sure. I did the funeral detail for a while, and I mean, when death comes to your family, it's a solemn family thing. But after a time of grievance. They should have no problems with anything being shown, especially a coffin draped with a flag on a newspaper. It's not that big of a deal.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's an issue.
It's a pretty big deal. Thanks for your call, though. It's definitely a big deal, you know, but it's a big deal that I think the Bush administration has wanted to hide.
I got an email here before we go to our next call. This is some food for thought. Bush doesn't want the caskets shown coming back from Iraq, but he will show caskets from 9/11 in political ads. Is this because he caused Iraq, but not September 11th?
Well,
that's good. That's pretty good.
It's a very, very interesting. Yes, our address is sedition@airamericaradio.com. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think so. We got a caller, Riley?
Yes, we do. Let's go to Phil, who's calling us from Chicago.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I would be in favor of the media showing those coffins. I would just hope that, you know, they would do it in a way that they continue to put the pressure on the Bush administration and don't desensitize the American public. In the Chicago Tribune, they are definitely doing a fairly good job of keeping us focused on the war there, even though the Chicago Tribune is a fairly conservative paper in, you know, Democratic Cook County, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something you say that I take a little bit of issue with. I think it's, you know, for newsworthy value, these photographs should be out there. But I think the media has to be very careful not to look as though they're doing it to put pressure on Bush. They should be making the point that these should be out there for public information and the public should make up their mind. And it's up to the public to put the pressure on Bush.
Hey, I agree. I also think that people are being desensitized when they're not shown. You know, when these things, you know, I don't think there's any way to, you know, desensitize people when they really acknowledge what these are, you know.
That's true. I am old enough to remember the photos from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as a former Army officer, I would hope that there is significant pressure through the media to give a balanced view, but yet keep the pressure up on full disclosure of what's happening over there.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for your call, Phil. We have Carl in Brooklyn.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
These photos were released to a reporter from the Seattle Times through a Freedom of Information Act request.
Yes.
And the only reason they haven't been shown was back in 91, Daddy Bush, Defense Secretary Richard Cheney, put the kibosh on it. And that's why it hasn't been shown before this. But I think even more significant, in 92, Cheney put through an initiative that started these PMCs, these private military corporations,
mm-hmm.
that are now, I think, the third largest force on the ground in Iraq. This privatization...
Right, like Blackwater and the mercenary/contractors.
Yeah, the book... Bush Dynasty has a really good part on this. It's called The Axis of Evil and the Web of
right.
War Prophets.
Yeah.
So it sort of goes hand in hand. Keep things out of sight and let your friends, you know, the condottieri, make all this money behind our back. I think it's disgraceful, and I think it's good these pictures came out.
Thank you very much
for
your call,
Carl.
I think you're absolutely right.
Let's go next to Mike, who's calling us from South Carolina.
Yeah, this is Mike. How you doing today?
All right, how you doing?
Hey, listen, it's absolutely imperative that these pictures be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is America has totally lost its conscience. It has no direction anymore. It doesn't understand what war is. This war, the whole war has been so clean and sanitized for our viewing that we don't see. If you look at what the people in the, looking at Al Jazeera and LRB are seeing on their TV, they know what war is.
Right.
We have no conscience. We have no idea of what war is.
That's an interesting point.
No, I think that America's lost its conscience in a lot of ways, and I think that the type of information that comes out from the administration is to continue not being, educated or even given the truth about what's really happening.
And remember, too, that Al Jazeera and these other, particularly the Arab language TV stations and newspapers, have been vilified in this country for showing these very graphic images of war.
And there's also, but I read a recent article that said that their journalist integrity was not that off, that, to show those kind of graphic pictures, even just to have photographers, pictures of actual war, you don't see as much of that as you did during Vietnam. I don't see much of it. You see it on the paper sometimes, but, almost any journalism coming out of the war that's really honest about what's happening there is hard to find.
I just want to correct something that one of the callers said, is that the photograph that was in the Seattle Times, I don't think it did come from the Freedom of Information Act, though someone did petition the Air Force, which then released photographs, but the one in the Seattle Times came from a woman contractor who was working for the Maytag Corporation in Kuwait City, and she was fired from her job by Maytag for releasing that photograph of coffins covered in flags inside a cargo plane via a friend of hers to the Seattle Times. So there are other photographs now on websites that were released by the Air Force, but that's not the way that photograph found its way into the Seattle Times.
Thank God we cleared that up.
I know you don't care, but just for the reasons of journalistic accuracy.
There was some guy out there going,
she's wrong!
That we stand for something.
I'm sure there are.
People care about this.
I know.
And also, she did a very brave thing, and she did not get paid for these photographs. And there seems to be a lot of misconception out there, and I've noticed in letters written to the Seattle Times that people criticizing the publication blame her for profiting from the war and other people's misfortune. She did not get paid for those photographs.
And she lost her job because
she lost her job. Her husband lost his job.
Yep.
The Defense Department's insisting they did not insist that she lost her job, but the Maytag Corporation took it upon themselves.
No, of course. Well, the Maytag Corporation buckled under the policy.
Exactly.
And
they're in the pockets of the Defense Department.
To save their own ass, they fired them, and then they said, okay, you guys. And the Defense Department goes, don't wait with us. We didn't know what you're talking about.
One more quick call. Ray in Pennsylvania. Ray, you're on the line with Morning Sedition.
Hi. How y'all doing, Mark? So, Mark.
Good.
Nice to talk to you.
I think that the Bush information machine is trying to share knowledge of what's going on over there. And what is really surprising to me is that nowhere in the media are we discussing these poor kids who are being injured over there. I mean, there are people losing legs, becoming blinded, serious injuries, and nobody's talking about that.
There have been some magazine articles. If you go onto a website, there's a New York Times magazine piece back a couple of months ago. If you do a Google search, I think you'll find some big pieces.
But I think he's referring to what I was talking about, is that all this stuff is very managed. That, you know, he'd like us to believe that there are not that many war dead, and you don't want to see them, and there are not that many people injured, because he doesn't really make it a point to hand out his, you know, the first time he handed out medals was a couple weeks ago. He doesn't go to funerals. But the truth is, there are thousands of people that have been, you know, badly injured, you know, in this conflict, and they don't get a lot of attention, and they keep that hidden as well. If you have to dig in magazines for it, and it's not in the paper, that's a bad thing.
You don't want to miss our final hour of the week. The Presidential Daily Briefing is on tap, plus the CIA guy who knew too much about Mark Maron. All ahead on Air America Radio.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry designed Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always Venture.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, he's a man who lived a life of danger. Plus, we're standing by for our daily facts from the Streisand compound. But first, here are the headlines at this hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning, I'm Wayne Gilman. More disturbing information stemming from that massive explosion in North Korea yesterday at a train station. The Red Cross says some 1,850 buildings have been leveled by the blast. Initial reports had indicated that 3,000 people were killed, but the Red Cross pegged the death toll at 54, some 1,200 injured. Figures based on the impact of the blast are bound to change over the next several hours. There have been speculation of a connection between the blast and a possible assassination attempt on North Korean leader Kim. The controversial figure passed through the site of the blast just 9 hours earlier, returning from a trip to China. Radical Shia Muslim cleric Muqtada al-Sadr is threatening to launch more suicide attacks if U.S. troops attack him and his forces in the holy city of Najaf. U.S. troops have surrounded Najaf in hope of a peaceful end to the ongoing al-Sadr standoff. It could be another day of partisan sparring over the environment. President Bush is visiting the Florida Everglades today, where he and his brother Jeb, Florida's governor, will highlight efforts to protect America's wetland areas. Bush says he's looking forward to their hands-on project.
We're going down to clear out some non-native plants from the Everglades area so that the wetlands can be more healthy and flourish more.
On Earth Day yesterday, Bush announced a new goal of expanding the number of protected wetland areas by 3 million over 5 years, but Democrat John Kerry says wetlands are an excellent example of Bush saying one thing and doing another.
For the last 3.5 years, this administration, this president, had a proposal that would have lost us 20 million acres of wetlands. It wasn't until the objections rose, the hue and cry came back, and finally they said, well, we'll revisit that rule.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Wayne Gilman.
Your mother's got out her photo album.
Oh, poor kids.
And this is your father.
Where's his head?
Camera missed it, I guess. Here's Aunt Judy.
Her hair used to be orange.
Yeah, I guess the camera was a little off. Here's Cousin Tommy.
He's fuzzy.
This Mother's Day, take the guesswork out of Mom's photography and printing.
Hey, Mom, open this.
With HP's PhotoSmart 735 digital camera and 7960 photo printer with breakthrough 8-ink technology for brilliant colors that resist fading for generations.
Wow. Is it complicated?
No, Mom, it's HP. It's pretty foolproof.
It's what-proof?
And now, buy both and get a $75 mail-in rebate. Learn more about HP cameras, printers, and PCs at your nearest retailer or hpshopping.com/mom. Color results based on Wilhelm Imaging Research, Inc. using the HP 58 photo inkjet print cartridge on HP Premium Plus photo papers.
Look, Grandma just took a picture of Dad standing in the corner.
Nice.
HP. Invent.
A small island with a big divide gets a chance to decide on its status tomorrow. Greek and Turkish Cypriots will vote on whether to reunify after 30 years of division. Cyprus, that is slated to enter the European Union on May 1st, but without reunification, only the internationally recognized Greek Cypriots south of the island would get membership, not the poorer Turkish Cypriot state in the north, recognized only by Turkey. The reunification plan was drawn up by UN Secretary General Kofi Annan.
The vision of the plan is simple: reunification and reconciliation in safety and security in the European Union.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, good news for the new government of Haiti. It has won overwhelming support from the international community at a joint news conference of government and donor organizations yesterday. United Nations has appealed for $35 million in emergency aid for the Caribbean nation. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Cobad Broadband Service Rep Arne Lewick on music. On fashion. On art.
I love that guy.
And on business broadband.
Oh, the key to business broadband is the same as any business decision. You want the best product at the best price. At Covad, we have broadband that's built for business, unlike the local phone company, which specializes in residential plans, and we have it for less. Hundreds of dollars a year less. And that's for broadband from us, the business broadband experts. Now, don't even get me started on Covad's selection of broadband services. Fixed IP addresses for firewalls, for web and email hosting. Well, the list just goes on and
Arne
on.
Arne Lewick on politics. Business broadband. Cobad knows it like nobody else. To get broadband built for business, call 1-800-555-0454. Plus, get a free router after mail-in rebate through June 30, 2004 when your business signs up at 1-800-555-0454 or gocobad.com. Not available in all areas. Saving based on published rates, March 10, 2004.
Hi, I'm Cindy Thompson for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. To some, it's just not country music without hard drinking and fast driving. But real life's not always a song. And in less time than it takes to play the latest country hit, someone will be killed or injured in an alcohol-related crash. So next time you're out with someone who's been drinking, don't let them take the wheel. Take the keys instead. Sad stories make great songs, but happy endings make better lives. That's why friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a 5-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
Hey,
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, we're standing by for, right now, we're standing by for today's liberal agenda. Today, we're standing by for right now, today.
And okay. You know what? Guess what? It's coming.
Plus, we'll have today's top secret eyes only presidential daily briefing. We got a lot of stuff going on. We got a CIA case officer. I got Mark Riley here with me. I got Sue Ellicott. I'm Mark Maron. I got Chris on the board who was just in. We were having a very deep philosophical discussion about, what's her name, Jennifer Gardner, as to whether or not she was like pretty, like I want to do her pretty, or just kind of pretty. But, you know, that's not really the issue at hand. The issue at hand, yeah, Chris decided that she's really pretty, but for some reason not sexually attracted to her at all. And I had that conversation with my wife, but what else am I going to say to my wife? What else do you say? Like, God, look at that one, huh? Right, baby? But anyways, I digress into another type of radio. We have a CIA ex-case officer, you know, Jack Rice. He's been here before.
I remember him, yes.
And he said some things that made me very nervous about me, about knowing things about me. And I, you know, I'm very easily prone to paranoia and fear, as you know, Mark.
And where are you going tonight?
I'm not going to tell. I'm not telling anymore. But, like, I've been, like, when I put out my first CD, you know, that you can get at markmaron.com if you like it, called Not Sold Out. It was shortly after the 9/11 attacks. And I did this really reactionary CD when no one was really talking about that kind of stuff. And I was so sure that, you know, that eventually the CIA was looking at me. They were watching me. The FBI was watching me. And then, like, you know, I realized that you can go to Washington. You can go to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and demand to see your file. Mm-hmm. But I would never do that out of the fear of getting there going, yeah, I'm Mark Maron, comedian, provocateur. I would like to see my FBI case file, please. I'm allowed as an American to see my case file. And she goes, okay, I'll check, Mr. Maron. And it just, she goes away for like 20 minutes and comes back and goes, I don't see that to have anything
nothing
here on you. And I'm like, are you sure? I'm Mark Maron, comedian, a lot of heavy stuff. Sorry, nothing. Okay. You want me to have my manager send you a tape? You should at least have a tape of my Letterman appearance. Okay, whatever you need. That's my fear, is that I'm not being paid attention to.
We'll slip them some information. They'll start a file on
I'm sure Jack Rice is going to enlighten me to what else he knows about me. Mm-hmm. The creeps. We'll see. What do you got going over there?
Well, one thing, and we talked about this last hour, that people are paying very close attention to are the photographs of the coffins of soldiers who have died over in Iraq.
About time, right?
Yeah. And there are now two different ways, apparently, that the media has gotten a hold of them. The Seattle Times, of course, published pictures yesterday that came from a contractor, as Sue mentioned.
Sunday.
I'm sorry.
A Maytag. Did you say they worked for Maytag?
Maytag Aircraft.
Not the dishwasher or the blue cheese company. Maytag Corporation.
I had
contractor. They ship stuff to the supplies to the U.S. military through Kuwait City.
I just had that moment where I'm like, they're sitting there unloading the other plane. Like, give me the watcher. Bring the watcher down. How about that? Oh, my God. Get the camera. And they, you know, and they took the pictures of the coffin.
Well, it's all called into question exactly why the Bush administration has been so stringent in trying to keep these photographs out of public view. There was a poll that was done that said 62% of the public wanted or thought that the pictures ought to be shown.
It's important to see the realities of war out of respect for the military. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that it would be disrespectful to the military.
Isn't there a one-word answer why are they reluctant? And it's Vietnam?
I was thinking politics, maybe. Just plain, pure and simple politics. This is not something he wants to see happen during the course of an election year. But as one of our emailers sent us some information, and it's true, Bush used caskets in his political advertising. They just weren't caskets of returning soldiers from Iraq. They were caskets of people who had been killed in the World Trade Center.
Right, and what was the rest you said, though? That was the kicker, the tagline. Was that, is it because he didn't cause the World Trade Center, but he did cause Iraq?
Yeah.
That's a pretty clever email. But Vietnam, I understand what Sue's saying, too, that the politics that go into this fear of showing the war dead in their coffins is that they believe, I think the conservatives and Republicans believe that that was part of what undermined them and caused public outcry during the Vietnam era. Raising awareness of the number of people that were killed.
It does show a kind of sense that you are very worried as a commander-in-chief, that you don't really trust your public to make the difference, tell the difference between seeing mutilated bodies as we saw on the bridge, the Americans who were killed, the contractors killed and dragged through the streets, you know, a few weeks ago. And this one is absolutely appalling and a desecration of bodies. And I would think that the you could see the coffins, flag draped coffins, as a, you know, the best possible image of respect.
Yeah, as
for
opposed to
soldiers,
disrespect.
As opposed to
say.
Disrespect.
Yeah.
And he's not playing it that way. He just wants to kind of run away from the issue completely, which is, just doesn't look smart.
But he literally said, do you have the quote there? He literally said that I'm not letting them show. One of the reasons we don't let them show that is because it is disrespectful. Where is it right here? The principal focus and purpose of the policy is to protect the wishes and the privacy of the families during their time of greatest loss and grief. So they want to hide the fact that they died honorably, you know, in a war, from the families that lost sons and daughters.
Well, plus, they're not showing toe tags with people's names.
Yeah, they're not labeled.
They are showing.
Dressed in the American flag.
In the American flag, which is obviously respectful.
I think he's petrified that people will make a connection with the number of people that they see killed in the paper and the actual bodies of the people that were slain in the conflict.
Well, one of the things that happened in Vietnam, and I remember this because it was one of the great contradictions, I think, of the entire war. Day after day after day, there were media reports, television reports, that gave people the impression that America was winning the war in Vietnam. And those coffins that were televised were in stark contrast. They would say every day, so-and-so would send a dispatch, some general would send a dispatch, 5 Americans killed, 5,000 Viet Cong, were killed in a firefight or whatever. But the reality was there were more and more of these caskets coming back, and eventually the whole rationale that America was winning was just completely broken down.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go to Jack Rice now? There's a number of terror-related cases. You know, they're hitting the Supreme Court, including the Guantanamo Bay case. And joining us by phone from Minneapolis to discuss these cases is Jack Rice. He's a former CIA case officer, a former state prosecutor, and is a criminal defense attorney. He discusses intelligence and legal issues on his radio show on WCCO AM in Minneapolis. Hi, Jack. How are you?
How you guys doing?
I'm pretty good. You know, I'm going to be there tonight.
Oh, I know you are. We're waiting for you.
All right.
It's nice to know you got your haircut for me. I appreciate that.
Oh, man, he's got the place bugged. You like it? It's okay, right?
Well, a little too trendy, but you know, what are you going to do?
So tell us about these three different cases before the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you got it. There are three really big cases that are coming up. There's the Guantanamo cases that you mentioned. There are about 600 people that are down there right now. The issue there is whether the president has to have any judicial sort of legal oversight to what he does to those people. These are foreign nationals who were found on foreign soil. So that's up right now. The second case that's coming up next week is, you might recall this, another guy who was found in Afghanistan who was an American citizen. His name was Hamdi. He was born in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah,
finally,
yeah.
Yeah, the third case, and this is probably the biggest one, at least for all of us here in the States, is the Padilla case. And he was picked up in Chicago. That was that dirty bomber case. Remember that?
Right. There was no real evidence on him having anything, though, right?
Exactly. But what's really most significant is what they did to this guy. Now, think of the scary part of this. This is a guy who is an American citizen found on American soil, and what the president did unilaterally is he said, I am not going to give you your constitutional rights. I'm going to take them away from you. You don't have a right to talk to your family. You don't have the right to talk to an attorney. You don't have the right to have a judicial system. I can keep you forever.
And that's scary on a whole bunch of levels.
Of
and we'll talk about that in just a second, Jack. I'm with Jack Rice, a former CIA case officer, and we'll be back with him to answer those questions right after this.
America Radio. Excellence in lamb basting.
Welcome to the Hot House Cafe. What can I get you?
Hello, Flo.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Wildfire. You're looking incendiary today. What can I get you, sweet pea?
Let's see. I'm so hungry I could consume a neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I think I'll start with the toasted wood-shaped shingle sandwich.
All righty. Super salad, baby doll.
The backyard dry brush salad looks delicious. I'll have that.
Okie dokie, with or without succulents?
Without. You know I can't stand water-retaining plants.
Oh, that's right.
And for dessert, I'd like an old gazebo sundae, sprinkled with irreplaceable photos and family heirlooms.
Anything to drink, baby?
Lawnmower gasoline. Unless you have some carelessly stored paste in there.
I think we just might.
Goody.
Knowing what wildfire likes to eat is half the battle. Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. That's firewise.org, a public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
We are ready for any unforeseen event which may or may not happen.
I recognize there are hurdles, and we're going to achieve those hurdles.
It will take time to restore chaos and order.
Some call those Bushisms, but we think it translates to George W., you're fired. He's the most powerful man in the free world, and your elected leader, but it's time to show George W. exactly how you feel. George W., you're fired. That's right. Get your George W., you're fired t-shirt today and start spreading the word. High quality, 100% cotton, various designs, available in every size. It's time to get the word out and support the upcoming Democratic run to the White House. And what better way to show America your convictions than on the front of your chest? Visit www.wyourfired.com. That's www.wyourfired.com and order yours today.
Hello, this is Della Reese, and I'd like for you to meet Faith in Action. Faith in Action means that people keep their independence. How? By getting help from volunteers. People of different faiths who shop, cook, drive, or just check in on some of the millions of Americans with long-term health care needs. If you're like me and have wondered how you can make a difference, volunteer with Faith in Action. They know how to use your time and talents right in your community. Even just a few hours can make a world of difference. A neighbor's independence depends on you and me. Faith in Action. Try it. Find out how good it feels at faithinaction.org or toll free 1-877-FAITH-11. That's faithinaction.org or toll free 1-877-FAITH-11.
Listen to Air America Radio whenever and wherever you want. We're available 24/7 on the internet. Just hit our website, www.airamericaradio.com. All you need to do is complete a quick online registration. Once that's done, you're ready to take us live. Air America uses the Real One Player for our streaming. www.airamericaradio.com. Streaming now, live, 24/7. www.airamericaradio.com.
It's 19 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley. We've got Jack Rice, former CIA case officer, on the phone that we're going to get back to in a second. Right now, I just got the PDB, today's Intelligence Community Presidential Daily Briefing for Friday, April 23rd. It's declassified. It's classified. So here we go. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that a legion of American soldiers may be conspiring to shed a negative light on our liberation of Iraq by returning from their tour of duty in a deceased condition. Photographs of these agitators in their so-called flag-draped coffins could provide aid and comfort to your political enemies, i.e. their families and relatives. Unfortunately, court-martialing these soldiers could prove to be problematic. However, we do recommend isolation from the general population and renaming them Home Relocated Deactivants. Respectfully, Department of Homeland Security. Heavy, man.
Heavy.
Very heavy.
Okay, we have on the
line. What
do you
think of that, Jack? Sorry. He's laughing.
Heavy. He's laughing. He has a dark sense of humor, that Jack. What happens when you serve
in
the CIA?
You can't help it. You have to be. I mean, you guys were talking about it before. Let's face it. When you see those, what you're looking at is the realities of war. I mean, everybody can talk about heroism and about helping the world and everything else, which is what the president is constantly doing. He's always wrapping himself in a flag. Let's look at the realities of that.
Right on.
That's Jack Rice, former CIA case officer, spook on Mark Maron on the phone. Jack, I'm kind of interested.
I got to be honest, Sue. I wish you could follow me around. I love the way you say that. You make me sound so something.
It's got that James Bondy feel, doesn't it?
Ask Mark Maron. He'll say it's not much fun being followed around by me. You should know that if you've been tracking him.
I'm running away right now.
You guys need a conversation. Yeah. I sound much more fun to be followed around by than I actually am.
I'm not getting into this.
Right.
It's between you two.
No, no,
I've got
no.
enough problems.
It's self-deprecating humor.
Now, we got something going between us. You guys stay out of it.
Okay, you got it. You got it.
Hey, I'm not the one coming to Minneapolis this weekend. You get Mark Maron.
That's a good point.
Okay, I'm kind of interested in this, in the Jose Padilla case, most of all, the one, because he was the one who was arrested, you know, on United States soil, and he's the one that John Ashcroft insisted that he could bring a tough criminal case against for providing what he said was material support to Al-Qaeda. I mean, do you think that they're going to get their way with him?
Well, you know, they've been trying. I mean, let's face it. They pulled him out of the criminal justice system on Padilla. I mean, right now, Ashcroft doesn't even touch that guy. He's sitting in a military prison down in South Carolina. So he still is really outside of this. They're treating him completely differently than even the Massawi case. That was actually a guy picked up here in Minneapolis.
Who had definite connections to Al-Qaeda.
Oh, he's already acknowledged, he is a follower of Al-Qaeda. So he's already said he's a member of that. But on the Padilla case, again, what they're trying to say is we have the right unilaterally to pull you out of the criminal justice system. So now you just don't have any constitutional rights. We do whatever we want to do with you. Now, that wouldn't be scary if we had a president, you know, who understood these things on a grander scale, but I don't think he realizes some of these issues that are coming up. And so that's what we're looking at. If you realize, if he can do that without any oversight, that means that he can do that to anybody, and there's nobody that can stop him. I mean, literally.
Can you flesh out some of those long-term liabilities?
Okay, here's the first. If you take a look at the first set of cases, this is the cases, the Guantanamo cases, where what we did was we grabbed a bunch of people. We have them in Guantanamo Bay. There's the first question is whether or not these people are even going to be on American soil. Technically, the government says that they are not. However, the reality of that situation is we own Guantanamo. It's ours. We have absolute control. It's not as if we're borrowing these from the Cubans and some point they can come in anytime they want and take it back or charge us a higher rent. So that issue is there. But I think if you look at the ramifications of that, worldwide, the perception is that what we're doing is that we are not part of the world community. We are above the world community. See, so we don't have to follow international rules, international laws. We can ignore anybody else and do simply whatever we like, which I think isolates us even further than some of the other things that we're doing around the world. So that's number one. When you deal with the Padilla case, and that's the one you mentioned, Sue, earlier, is that's the American here on American soil. Generally speaking, we all have constitutional rights and protections automatically. As soon as somebody is arrested, they have the right to have an attorney, they have the right to know what they're being charged with, and they have the right to essentially confront those who are saying, I've done terrible things. In this case, what they've done is they've said, you don't have those rights, the term inalienable. In other words, we can't get those automatically. What happens in their case is, no, actually, they can alienate those rights from you. They're literally saying, you don't have those anymore. We take those away because we don't like you.
We own you.
But where does it stop? I mean, how safe are any of us kind of walking around, kind of leading our lives? You know, what's to stop them yanking any of us under these rules, under their laws, I think they have?
That's exactly the point, is that there is nothing to do that. And I'm not actually somebody who tries to blow things out of proportion. From my perspective, what they are doing in this case is if he has the ability to do this, without any oversight, that means literally he can at any time decide that anybody else who in his mind he feels is a threat, he can simply have them picked up.
So how do you think the Supreme Court will rule on the Padilla case?
Right. On the Padilla case, I think they're going to find that you have constitutional protections and that there is absolute right to have an oversight. So you're going to see that. On the Hamdi case, that's the one, the American citizen on foreign soil, but he was caught allegedly in a military, sort of a combat zone. That one's a little bit more dicey. The court is already, on the Court of Appeals has already said, we're not sure on that thing. Maybe they're allowed to do that. So that one's tougher. Frankly, the ones in Guantanamo, I got a feeling that the court's going to simply ignore them.
If Jose Padilla is taken out of the military situation that he's in other words, he's been designated an enemy combatant.
Right.
If they take him back into the criminal justice system, how much evidence do they actually have on him?
Well, you know, this is an interesting part of that, too, Mark, because what happens in a case like that is that if they've held him in custody and they've been interrogating him for the last 2 years and they have everything, from my perspective, if I were defending a guy like that, my first response is he's been held in custody by American military or anybody else. Anything that he told them is not admissible in a courtroom because he wasn't given access to his attorneys. He wasn't given access to anything. As a result, they're not going to have hardly any evidence at all.
But that won't stop them, will it?
Well, yeah, it hasn't stopped them in the past.
How can they play by both sets of rules? I mean, if they're assuming, you know, all control, and then, you know, that's two different sets of rules there, isn't it?
Well, there absolutely are. I mean, this is the interesting part about this to me is that it's completely arbitrary. Let's take a look. Remember the John Walker Lynn case?
Mm-hmm.
That was the kid out of San Francisco.
The American Calvin.
Exactly. And that kid that they brought back, they charged him. He eventually pled guilty to something in a federal criminal court. Now, what they did which is what they should have done in the Hamdi case, too, if they really wanted to be consistent, which is what they should have done in the Padilla case. But they're not doing that. They're simply saying, well, it's sort of a cookie cutter thing where they're saying, well, I'll try this one over here. No, I'll try that one over there. And you have no idea where you're going.
You got to admit one thing about John Walker. He certainly took the semester abroad to a whole new level, didn't he?
You know, he should. I think he really did. That's what happened. He really took full advantage of it, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
Good for him. Jack Rice, thank you very much for joining us. So I've got you down.
My pleasure.
Secret agent man.
And also, well, one quick thing, Jack. Now, was it the CIA in collusion with the mob and the Cubans in JFK, or?
Right,
I'll just let you laugh.
I'll tell you what. I'll let you know when we pick you up on the way.
All right, thanks a lot.
We aren't done with you. I think we have more questions for you.
It's fine. It's fine. Thanks a lot, Jack. Thanks a lot.
You take care of yourself.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I love talking to that guy.
So you taking a cab to the airport, are you?
Apparently I'm being picked up. It's going to be great. Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I'm figuring now, you know, on this end, when you go to the airport here, somebody from Jack's crew is going to be taking you there. The guy sitting next to you on the plane.
Yeah, maybe I can do his show tomorrow. When's he on the air?
I have to give him my check for him, his weekly bulletin on stuff I should know about you, Mark.
Uh-oh.
I'm keeping my file.
I hide
He's
nothing.
Filling me in.
I will tell you everything you need.
There are things. There are always things.
Yeah. I mean, the bad things. But I'm more than willing to tell you all the bad things about me, but whatever bad feelings I have about you, I will let go of.
Wow, okay, that's a new segment coming right up.
Yeah. Mary, let's go.
Let's just scrap the liberal agenda, go straight to that.
The prolonged apology to Sue on the air.
Oh, my goodness. Still to come on Air America, we'll talk to you on the phones, plus the all-important liberal agenda for the weekend. But first, here are the news headlines on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Conflicting accounts this hour on what led to the deadly blast in North Korea yesterday, killing 150 and injuring 1,200. North Korean government is saying now that a train filled with dynamite struck power lines that caused the explosion. Earlier accounts had two trains, one with liquefied gas and another with explosives, colliding in the station. Despite this, the death toll continues to rise, and that figure will change. Some 1,850 buildings have been destroyed. Out of Iraq this hour, top U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer officially announced a policy change to allow some former Baathists in Iraqi ministries and the military. Just in time for the November elections, the state of California is being advised to scrap use of the high-tech touchscreen voting machines. The machines produced by Diebold Election Systems are said to be defective and led to some problems in last month's California primary. And out of London, school programs discouraging carbonated drinks appear to be effective in reducing obesity among children. A new study suggests is the first research to document that such programs work. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Planet Check. Planet Check. fight to save the oceans, waves, and beaches.
It's not just Earth Day, but Surf Day. Michelle Livingston, Marketing Director for Buffalo Exchange, explains.
On Saturday, April 24th, Buffalo Exchange stores are going to celebrate Surf Day by having a Dollar Day sale for Surf Rider.
The Surf Rider Foundation is a grassroots environmental nonprofit organization that works to protect our oceans, waves, and beaches.
I think it's very important that each individual makes an effort to do something to give back to our environment.
This Saturday, Buffalo Exchange shares the love with Surf Rider. All proceeds from their Dollar Day sale benefit the Surf Rider Foundation.
Do your part for the beach while shopping for hip used clothing at a bargain.
Surf on over to BuffaloExchange.com. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Sue Ellicott here on Air America Radio, 32 minutes past the hour, with Mark Riley and Mark Maron.
And Mark, since you're getting ready to fly, this story is just for you.
Okay, this is going to freak me out on top of the CIA guy picking me up in Minnesota.
This is even stranger.
What if he really shows up, man? I better bring a DAT machine so I can record the conversation.
Well, you know, the airport security has been an issue, obviously, since September 11th. And now there are new tests that show serious gaps in passenger and bag screening. And they raise new questions about the future of the federal overhaul. Say that fast.
Federal overhaul.
Aviation security. Very good.
You're hired.
According to Representative John Mica, we have a system that is not working.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
I think that's an overreaction. It is working. It's incredibly cumbersome, and nothing is going to be perfect. But isn't it a bit worrying? Isn't he a Republican?
Yes, he is a Republican. Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm not sure if he is a Republican.
Well, he's a chair. He's the chair of the House of Representatives.
All I know
subcommittee. Doesn't that make him a Republican?
Probably, yeah. Most likely. And he is saying, in fact, that because they've done a Department of Homeland Security test, and there are just a lot of shortcomings on these screenings.
Then why does it take so long? Why is it like, you know, I don't know. Now I'm just scared.
Are they picking the wrong people to scrutinize closely? Is that what's going on?
Isn't it weird when they go through your bag? Don't you? Because like something, you ever had that happen where they leave the little thank you note? Sorry, but we've gone through your stuff.
You know what?
Did you ever get that?
I went down to Virginia in February.
Yeah.
And you know they were going over people. They were asking people to take off their shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went through, and they never said a word. So I asked one of the people after, like, why didn't you check mine? They checked my wife's shoes, but not mine. And I always found that to
be a random search. It got to the point
where... No, it's not.
No?
You know what he told me?
What?
He said my shoelaces were the reason why they didn't do it.
They knew from your shoelaces?
They knew. The color of my shoelaces were so they didn't bother to make me take my shoes off.
No, it's not that. They just knew about your socks.
No, man, my socks...
Is that a stinky feet thing?
Yeah. Is that a stinky feet insult, pal?
Sorry, it was.
That's cute.
Because I use that. What sounds
better with a British accent, though. It doesn't sound quite so rude, does it?
Your socks, darling.
Well, these security lapses have come up before. They're continuing to come up. As Sue points out, there is no perfect system. It's not going to work
all the time. Whoa, whoa, you're looking at a perfect system, baby.
Oh, yeah.
He worked out.
Well, yeah.
If you were perfect, Jack Rice wouldn't know where you were going this evening, would he?
Yeah, well, that's not got nothing to do with me. I have a perfect system. Yeah, what's your...
Just, you know, this week I read that there could be 5-hour check-ins to fly from Europe to America because of the security system, which is just crazy. I mean, I think that the security thing is alarming Americans unnecessarily. I have friends, David and Naomi and their kids, just went to London for a week. Okay, they flew from Newark. They were told to check in 3 hours before their plane took off.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You do not need to get there 3 hours before.
It depends. You know, it's really random as to how long the line's going to be, you know, and it's you don't really know. I generally get there 2 hours before. Just because you just, you know, some days are different than others. You don't know what's backing it up, who didn't have their coffee, why something's backed up. And, you know, it's weird how used to being searched we've gotten. Because everyone, remember initially people were like, this is ridiculous. And then they were going to put those machines in that actually x-rayed you to where they could see you naked.
Yeah, it looks like they could give you a walking MRI or something.
But worse than that, literally, it just looked right through your clothes, and there you are standing naked. How'd you feel about that?
That'd be good if they could tell you you had some kind of disease. It could be a twofer.
Yeah, really, right.
It could be like an MCI scan at the same time as you check your bags. Right. It'd be cheaper to fly than to pay for that medical stuff.
It's like, yeah, you can get on the plane, but you might want to get that mold checked out.
And your lungs, I'd give up cigarettes if I were you, because your lungs are kind of black.
Yeah, there's something, that's not a rash. But have a good flight, and, you know, I hope everything goes well.
Yeah, and by the way, Micah is a Republican, you write to, because the ranking Democrat is Peter DeFazio of Oregon.
Well, you know, Colin Powell said this week that the visitors to the United States are down 30% since 9/11, in part because of fears of flying and security checks.
And some of them are in Guantanamo.
That's right.
Yeah, right. And those five-hour checks, they just don't want to be bothered.
Hotel Guantanamo.
I think people will still keep coming as long as clothes cost half what they cost in Europe.
Well, I mean, isn't the feeling about the United States in a lot of Europe, aren't people pretty negative about it? Even people that aren't necessarily our enemies, per se. But, I mean, I don't get the feeling that people like our country that much right now.
They don't like the politics, but they sure do love the prices of jeans and sneakers.
Really? Are they expensive where you come from?
They're very expensive where I come from. That quaint little place full of Tudor houses.
I'm not saying you're a foreigner.
No.
But sure, talk funny.
You know, but friends come over from Europe, and it's a bit like when people used to go to the Soviet Union before the Iron Curtain fell. They come with empty suitcases, and they go back literally with pairs of, four or five pairs of sneakers each, jeans, sweatshirts, because it costs them less to fill up their suitcase with stuff here than it does to buy one item of clothing pretty much over there.
I hardly buy any. Nothing holds up like it used to. You remember when you used to get a pair of jeans when you were like seventh grade? That's, going back to the 70s for me, and they'd last like 10 years. And now you buy jeans, they start to, what am I complaining about pants for? Like, I'm a guy, I like to break in my own pants. You know what I mean? I don't like getting,
pants. As opposed to somebody else breaking them in?
No, they have pants you buy broken in already. And when that started happening, I'm like, God, we are really lazy. We can't even break in our own pants. But I nothing holds up anymore, and it's a real problem. And I'm surprised that people still are so excited about it. The Levi's last like 10 minutes before they start turning to.
And they're always pre-owned, those pants, aren't they? They're never used. Somehow it's okay to wear stuff that's pre-owned. Yeah. Like fancy cars, luxury cars are pre-owned, but like scruffy Camrys are used.
Yeah. I don't have any pre-owned pants. Maybe I have a couple of old suits I bought at thrift shops, but this conversation has kind of gone into a ditch, hasn't it?
No. But, your friends at Diebold.
Dan, let's get on that.
Well, this is one of your major conspiracy theories.
It's not a conspiracy theory any longer. Today marks the day that the Diebold voting machine conspiracy theory is made fact.
Fact.
What do you got, Riley?
Well, 15,000 touchscreen voting machines used by Diebold, or actually manufactured by Diebold, have been recommended against by a special panel in California. They want to get rid of them. Now, this would not apply to all the Diebold voting machines in the state, only in a specific number of counties. I believe it's 10 counties.
But it's a start, and I read somewhere on an email I got from a fairly reliable source that similar actions are taking place in Maryland, and that the questionability, these machines have been questionable from day one. A voting machine with no paper trail, it's one thing to deal with chads, but to just have a computer screen that, like, just by the amount of problems you have at your home computer, how can that be legal or legitimate in any way without a paper trail? I hope they get rid of all these machines, because none of it will matter. Campaigns, polls, nothing matters if there's a guy sitting in a room that can go, all right, we got Nevada, it's done. Yeah, it's just not, you can't, it's not.
But our IT guy, Mike Borges, he would be a millionaire fixing these machines, because essentially some of the places where they have recommended the machines be taken out of are upset about it. They say the machines work fine, people like them, voters enjoy them.
Republicans love them, they say.
Yeah, Republicans love them. They're a big contributor to a certain president of the
The head of the Diebold company. Of course people like them, because it's easy. People anything that makes something easier, people like. But I think we're, on a lot of levels, being paralyzed by convenience. You know what I mean? I think that, it's done the old way, because the old way can work. I mean, and it has worked in the past. There was a Chad problem, but even that was a fix. I mean, come on. I mean, how easy is it going to be to be able to fix these machines? It's going to be easy. Maybe I'm paranoid, but why leave that option open?
So what should we do? Go back to, signing a cross by our names? I mean, what is the foolproof way?
Yes, I think that everybody should get in a big line and be counted.
That makes sense.
That would solve the unemployment, jobless problem.
And everybody should definitely get out and vote, too. And like this thing, it's I think that they can make a machine that has a paper trail. They did make a machine that had one. Somebody who used to work at Diebold, I think, or maybe my information isn't right, but the guy that created the machine, the computer machine, the voting machine that leads a paper trail was, you know, silk-witted. And I'm saying that twice.
Yes, you are saying it twice.
All right, maybe it was an accident, but it was kind of coincidental. But there is a machine out there that can be used in place of this machine that's equally as effective.
Okay, machine creator, if you are listening, you can call us and justify your Diebolds. 1-866-303-AAR0, 1-866-303-2270. But really, we're taking your calls about whether the American public should be seeing coffins of U.S. deceased military returning home. 1-866-303-2270.
Hey,
Air America Radio, because someday democracy will catch on here.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastic to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is Lila McCann for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in my life, but nothing is more important than life itself. When you do drink and drive, you risk not only your life, but the lives of everyone on the road. So choose a designated driver. Designated drivers rock.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, and the National Association of Broadcasters.
Adding fractions is nothing.
For real?
Look, these are denominators. You multiply this one so that it's the same as that, then you add them up.
Man, that's easy.
Charles Bennett dreamed of returning to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without money for college, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A message from the UNCF and the Ad Council.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry Design Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always venture.
Unfiltered.
My girlfriend is Catholic and her family is very Catholic, and we're walking past the Catholic church in our neighborhood, which is called Our Lady of Pompeii.
Oh,
which
nice.
Is difficult anyway, because being buried alive in lava is a weird idea for a church.
Not necessarily. They love martyrdom.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
But lava itself, like the whole hot burning...
Have you read about saints?
Sorry.
It's always a grisly, fiery death.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Welcome back to Morning Sedition here on Air America. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. I got two emails here. Al from Charlotte, North Carolina writes, "Not showing the coffins dishonors those who gave their lives in service to the country. Hiding them says these people no longer exist." And Rob in France, "I wanted to point out that when Hussein's two sons were killed and their photos were shown all over the planet, that seems a little hypocrite and obscene." I think he says it means hypocritical. So we got caught. What's that, too?
He just said his margin's wider.
Yeah. I always do that with emails. I think that the word is there and it's not there. Meg in Long Island, how are you?
I am definitely against them hiding the coffins because I think it's horrible and it is disrespectful. But I wanted to tell you how I handled some abortion picketers, anti-abortion picketers, rather.
Okay.
I live out on the island, and there was a women's center across the street, and usually who I see picketing are old men carrying pictures of full-term babies. They're not even fetuses.
Yeah.
So I drove up my car, and I said, "Excuse me, sir, pro-choice is not pro-abortion. It means choice. And if you don't want to have an abortion, by all means, don't do so." And he went, "Bah, bah, 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 bah."
Yeah.
A couple of other things I wanted to mention. I had tried to get in yesterday.
Yeah.
On the 21st, there was a little blurb in the business section. I don't know if you guys caught it, that the government is going to allow Nissan to get away with a tricky scheme about declaring the fuel efficiency of their cars.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be done separately for domestic and foreign-made. They're going to allow them to combine them and then declare, then figure out the fuel efficiency.
Okay, Meg. Well, thanks a lot. We want to take some more calls about the coffins and maybe the abortion issue. What we're talking about about these military coffins is that the Bush administration has tried to stifle, had passed a ruling
an existing ruling, actually. It goes back a number of years. It's official U.S. policy.
Oh, they're enforcing.
Enforcing it.
That there should be no photographs allowed out of the war zone of military coffins, and now they are out by a number of reasons. We'll take Sarah in. There is no Sarah on my board.
But we'll take her if she calls.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for taking me. Of course, we should show the coffins. Number one, judging by the photos that have appeared this week, it's one of the few things we do right. We actually do it well.
You mean the funerals and the proceedings?
The way they're even just coffined and draped and put in the planes.
Hmm.
They are very nice, neat rows. And it is actually amazing to look at the photograph and think that they stay in those positions on a plane. You're right.
Well, and it's not possible to look at that and not cry. Or at least be stopped for a second.
Yeah, I think it does make people think and make them wake up to the reality of war.
And I don't know, I don't know anyone who even, the NewsHour, at least from the beginning, has been publishing the photos and the names, as they become available and the broadcast has them.
That's today, though, right? This is all happening today. This is the first time we've seen this, really.
Well, the coffins, but the NewsHour, Jim Lehrer, has had names and faces since the beginning.
Oh, right. Okay, I thought you were talking
and
about
And what I'm saying is that it's not possible to see that and not stay there with it.
Absolutely.
And now, I think it might be possible for some people, but at least they'll have to make a conscious choice to ignore it.
Right. Good point.
Whereas if the government ignores it for them, then, gee, how convenient is that?
So this is the way freedom of information is supposed to work. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Sorry, I just want to quickly say, before Mark Riley, I know you want to speak, but I just want to sound as I hate to sound as I was maybe joking and trivializing about the coffins. I think that the photographs from inside the cargo planes are really very moving and very ceremonial. And I think it's incredibly impressive that you would never believe it's in a plane. It's hard to see why anybody would want to suppress these pictures.
866-303-2270. Riley?
All right. Let's go next to Steve, who's calling us from Illinois. Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm thrilled that you guys are back on the air. Last week, I think it was. You were off the air for a couple of days here. I think that the flag drape coffin should be shown. I think it's disrespectful to the people who gave their lives. I even think perhaps they should run something in the newspapers like they did after September 11th, where they showed pictures of each of the soldiers and their hometown and stuff like that, because I think the families have given so much and the soldiers have given so much. And please keep up the good work at Air America. I think you might be the difference in November.
Oh,
well, Steve, thanks a lot.
That was nice. I wanted to talk a minute. Sue, you had a couple of letters you wanted to read?
Yeah, the Seattle Times, who sort of started all this whole controversy by publishing a picture of the coffins in its Sunday newspaper, has had a lot of letters. And on their website, they give samples of more than 175 comments they received. They make the point that overwhelmingly people are in favor of their publication of the photograph. But there's, this, I think one of the letters speaks to some of the anger, which I find unfathomable. A woman who wrote in saying, "We consider their flight home to their loved ones exempt from exploitation for political purposes." She says the Seattle Times is guilty of trafficking stolen merchandise and that she is glad, quote, "the morbid woman lost her job." That's the woman who gave the photograph to the paper. "I hope she will forever be known as the ghoul," which seems very extreme.
What is this, some sort of Ann Coulter
I feel like sending her I feel like sending her a subscription to a yoga class in Seattle to calm down. And there's another one.
That'll do it for her.
Well, you never know, the power of yoga. And there's another one which says, if someone is bothered by the coverage, they have the option of looking elsewhere, which is quite true. Yes, the photographs are disturbing, but the whole war situation is disturbing. This represents the truth, however ugly. And that's a good point, is that these photographs are nowhere near as disturbing as the photographs of people being killed on the ground.
Absolutely.
Or the mutilated contractors that we saw some weeks ago. And
someone has a journalism question for you, Sue.
Oh, really?
AJ in Westford, New York. How are you?
No, actually, we got Pat from Mississippi.
Okay.
Pat, good morning.
Good morning. This is Pat Robinson. I'm calling from the beautiful Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Hi, Pat.
All right.
I want to talk to you about this picture. I grew up on Air Force bases. My dad was a career man in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I was an adult raising a small child during the Vietnam era. Every night we had body counts on TV. Everybody knew what war really looked like. And it isn't yellow ribbons and pretty little flags. It is exactly what we saw. It is 20 coffins lined with flags. That is exactly what my dad's coffin looked like when it came home from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an incredibly political move on the part of the administration to continue to make this war look like it's always a good guy thing. It's, war should be the last solution, not the first. I'm utterly appalled that they're allowing this kind of censorship, although I'm not really surprised.
Thank you very much for your call, Pat.
Now, you want to go to AJ?
Yeah, is he there, AJ, in New York?
Morning, guys.
How you doing? You got a question for Sue?
Yeah, particularly Sue this morning with her journalistic credentials.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about guys like William Safire and George Will and Robert Novak, who granted their ideology is whack.
Are you getting a headache just thinking of them?
No, but I'm thinking that, from an academic standpoint, these are learned guys, very articulate, and how do they, day after day, cover a guy who cannot speak, a guy who they wouldn't hire to get their mail? How do they defend? Now, this is a serious question now. I'm really trying to figure out.
I'm sitting here. I'm taking it seriously.
How can they defend day after day a guy who's totally inarticulate, stand up for that press conference last week, which was an embarrassment to say the least? I thought maybe you might offer some insight into this.
I don't know. I mean, as a journalist, I can understand why they're allowed to be in print defending him, but thank goodness I can't see inside their heads.
Oh, Lord. It's funny, too, because here was Novak, who was the guy who outed, what was his name, Wilson?
His wife,
who was a CIA agent. There is still, and most people don't know, there's still an ongoing investigation without any conclusions at all about who did that and how it happened.
But Novak just gives me the creeps. He's got no, real conscience at all, and he's got those big, weird, fake teeth. He's hard to look at. I don't know how any of those guys can. I think they actually have their own political agenda. They're aligning themselves with these people for a reason. They're treated differently because of that alignment. And then if it all goes to pot, then they've got to start over again, and they'll be the ones on the outside. Isn't that the way it always works? They pick teams?
Kind of. I mean, I think that you can see someone like Novak as being kind of more caricatural. I think that William Safire is a good writer. I don't know that he always backs up everything that Bush and the administration does.
What about George Will?
George Will. See,
critical.
George Will, Novak, guys like this, John McLaughlin, they're all part of this whole Washington Beltway thing that goes on. where, you know, all of these guys depend on politics for their living. They make a very good living from it. They get to go to the best bars and the best restaurants.
It's all a big game to them, though, isn't
it?
I mean, it's like out here in the real world, up here in our studio, the real world.
The real world.
I mean, these are real things. Like, all these people we talk to every day on the phone, like, they sound, they are definitely real people with real lives and real concerns, but to a lot of politicians and to a lot of reporters, it's just this big game they're part of down there in Washington. That, you know,
and they're old guard. I mean, they're old guard. I don't think that they speak to kind of, you know, the younger generation of kind of people looking out there and kind of criticizing the government or kind of figuring things out for themselves. I would say if you sent them some hip hop stuff, they would not have a clue.
Not even Hey Ya.
They get they get their news from Jon Stewart, which is, you know, a pretty good news program. Only it's not, you know, a real news program, but that's where they learn a lot about what's going on.
Novak and Outkast. I don't see it.
Oh, there's the facts coming in from the Streisand compound. It's our daily liberal agenda. Remember, liberal soldiers, these are your marching orders for the day. Write these down. 1. Give heavy tip to shoeshine guy, then nag him to report the extra income to the IRS. 2. Protest pornography, then censorship, then pornography, then censorship. Lie back with head reeling. 3. Apologize to an Indian on behalf of whites everywhere, then picket their casinos. 4. Throw red paint on someone for something. 5. Men, write a poem about the virtues of feminism. 6. Women, inform men they have no right to an opinion about feminism. 7. Petition to remove God from Godiva chocolates. And that's our liberal agenda for today, April 23rd, Friday.
Iva chocolate.
Iver chocolate.
Have a good weekend, you know.
Yeah,
all
man.
You guys have fun, Sue, sailing. Yeah.
Happy
and eating
flying.
Burgers.
Yeah,
I know.
Take
got
your
the,
shoes
the
off.
New paranoia with me.
I would say get there 3 hours ahead of time.
I'm going to go now.
Oh, you?
I'm on my way.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting week.
It has. It was. I think all in all, good week. I had a good time. It was a good radio for me. You?
Yeah, and it was faster. This week. I don't know why.
Maybe we're getting to like each other. We're getting the hang of it.
You guys give good radio.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Join us next week for more good radio here on Air America, when our guests will include an Iranian comedian. He's like Iran's answer to Yakov Smirnoff, only funny. If I can see the copy. That's next week's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. Good weekend, everybody.
Bye.
To be or not to be? That is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a 5-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel from Unfiltered on Air America Radio, where we promise you news and opinions you will not hear anywhere else, including on the rest of the network. It's unfiltered at airamericaradio.com. That's our email address. We always love to hear from you. I'll be back in just a second with Chuck D and Liz Winstead right after news from Air America Radio.